For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg! Good morning, Manitoba! For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, here for the next couple hours to bring you all the latest Winnipeg Jets discussions, analysis, and our unique brand of a sense of humor. Gentlemen, good to see you both on this Saturday morning. How are things? How is life? Good to see you.
Unique brand of humor, Drew. I like that. That's one way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it is pretty unique. I don't know if it's funny. That's the most important thing, but yeah. What's up, boys? Overrated. Yeah, exactly. Funny's overrated. I mean, we really shouldn't be, you know, funny anyways, right? But yeah, I mean, a little bit quiet on the Jets front. Unfortunately, the Winnipeg Ice weren't able to, you know, keep the Manitoba teams in action, but that Edmonton Oil Kings team, boys, we talked about it last week, just absolutely stacked with NHL draft picks, right? So, I mean, the Ice had a phenomenal season. They just couldn't get to the WHL final, but yeah, ready to talk hockey. We've got Marat coming on. We've got Eric Comrie coming on. It's going to be a fun one as usual.
That it will be, exactly. Ice unable to, they dropped handily 7-1 defeat at the hands of the Edmonton Oil Kings. The Oil Kings, a juggernaut, as we've discussed on the program before. And the Ice, you know, injury troubles biting them at the worst possible opportunity, you know, and they weren't able to overcome that. Dave M., good to see you. How are things in your world?
Always good here to talk hockey with you boys Saturday morning. So feeling good, ready to roll.
Yes, I would say let's get
Fact that we're going to get more rain. That's great.
It's, but apparently it's not going to be as much rain today as they thought it was going to be. It was supposed to rain all day today. Now it's only going to rain sporadically.
Periodically. Well, so, all I know is that, but I mean, who's ready for this? Like, I mean, one day you're wearing coats. It's freezing, not literally a coat, but you're dressed warm. Yeah. And then next day it's 29 yesterday. It was ridiculous.
It was warm yesterday. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And Team Canada, we should mention, they're getting started in the World Hockey Championships. Yeah, the semifinals point. Against, I don't even know who they're playing, the Czechia.
Is that Czechia? Yeah.
Czechia is who they're playing.
And it's Finland versus USA.
There you go. So,
well, yeah, that game actually just ended. Finland won 4-3, Dave. I think it ended a few minutes ago. And what was incredible is, you know, for those who weren't paying attention or watching, the U.S. Was down to four defensemen. So there is a Jets connection here. Nate Schmidt was one of those healthy four defensemen, played just over 27 minutes. Wow. Seth Jones, guys, played over 31 minutes. So pretty incredible that the U.S. was able to, you know, make that a one-goal game. But obviously they're out, so they'll be competing for a bronze. But as you mentioned, Canada has a chance to punch their ticket to gold.
Especially the epic comeback that Canada had on whatever day that was, Thursday, I guess, against Sweden, where they were down. I mean, they were down into the last, you know, 10 minutes of the third period. They were down what?
That was 3-0.
They were down 3-0 at a point in time, and it was 3-1 with 10 minutes to go. And then they staged an epic comeback before Drake Batherson won it in overtime on a power play to send Canada through to the semifinals. So that game coming up in the
Pierre-Luc Dubois had a goal and an assist.
That's right, exactly. So Pierre-Luc Dubois contributing,
he's
Adam
good
Lowry
tournament.
Contributing, Nate Schmidt contributing for Team USA. So you can watch Team Canada. I think it starts start at 10 or 11, whatever it is. If it's at 10, you can have it on in the background because you'll still be watching us. If it starts at 11, well, you can do whatever you want with that free time after IC ends. Let's get into the Winnipeg Jets. No news. It was quiet, as you said, all week. And I think a lot of people were surprised about that because... I'm not sure if they were necessarily reliable sources.
Not Dave, apparently.
Reliable sources didn't say anything. People on Twitter and Reddit and whatever
else. MySpace.
Yeah, ICQ, the whole nine yards, said that there was going to be a press conference on Tuesday, this past Tuesday, announcing Barry Trotz as the new Winnipeg Jets head coach. Well, Tuesday came and went and nary a word to be heard. Does that give you any pause for concern, guys, or is that just sort of people got a little bit carried away listening to people that they necessarily shouldn't have been listening to.
Yeah, I think that was a little bit of the May long weekend crazies that were happening. If you listen to us last weekend, right, guys, like we said, you know, we didn't think that, you know, Barry Trotz was going to make his decision, you know, imminently, right? So whether that was going to be, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever, this past week, I mean, we don't know, you know, if he's met with any other teams, but, you know, we talked about the other teams out there that don't have a head coach right now, right? Vegas, mm-hmm. Dallas, Philadelphia, right? Detroit. So, I mean, no, yeah, I'm not, exactly. I'm not surprised at all. I don't necessarily think that, you know, we're going to be sitting around here in July or August still wondering, you know, what team Barry Trotz is going to pick. I imagine it's going to be sometime in the next, I don't know, week to 2 weeks, I would imagine. You know, could be a little bit later. So, yeah, I mean, I think, by the way, guys, some of the stuff that you saw on social media was tongue-in-cheek, right? Like, I think some people took it more seriously than others. I mean, I don't know if you want to get into, you know, on the Rod Peterson show and everything like that. Obviously, you know, Rod's a friend of the show. We have a lot of respect for him. But, I mean, I'm not sure really what happened there, you know, with that announcement. And then there were some other accounts that I think were having some fun with it. So that's all I wanted to say. I don't know if how many people actually thought Barry Trotz was the announcement was going to be made that he was being hired as the Jets head coach. I certainly didn't. I kind of took it with a grain of salt, but I know that there are some people out there on social media that felt like they were kind of, I don't know, lied to or misinformed, whatever you want to say. But I think we knew that Barry Trotz was going to take his sweet time. And why wouldn't you, when you have other teams out there that are interested in you and you're making a decision, you know, for the next 3, 4, 5 years, right? Like, this isn't just a short-term, you know, next year of my life decision. You know, this could possibly be Barry Trotz's last NHL team that he's the head coach for.
Well, let me ask you that. So a lot of what we've heard, and of course you haven't heard this directly from the horse's mouth, so this is, you know, hearsay, wouldn't hold up as evidence in the court of law, but you've heard that Barry Trotz wants to coach for a few years and then move into a management role. That's what sort of the word has been.
Yep.
You know, if you're the Jets, and so he's looking for a landing spot that can sort of offer him both, can offer him an opportunity behind the bench and then offer him that transition into a front office role. If you're the Winnipeg Jets, do you have any pause or any hesitation, Dave, in offering him sort of that dual opportunity? This is a guy who doesn't have any front office experience. Obviously, he's got a ton of behind the bench experience. He's got a ton of knowledge, but that doesn't necessarily, you know, there's been ample number of cases where a good head coach doesn't necessarily make a good general manager. Mm-hmm. But if you're an organization and that's what Barry Trotz is looking for, do you have any hesitation in sort of coming to that kind of agreement with him?
No, I mean, I don't think so. And if you're the Winnipeg Jets and you're looking to get your group, first of all, you're looking to make a splash. You're looking to get fans excited again. I mean, if Barry Trotz says he's willing to come to the market and be your head coach for 3 years, get him a chance to get to 1,000 wins in the NHL if things go right and he's able to turn things around and really get this, you know, the ship sailing again. I don't. In fact, I think it's a really good opportunity for the Jets because, you know, he can look what he did with Lane Lambert, right? Lane Lambert was his assistant coach in New York and was written about as a potential head coach for many, many years. And he groomed him and he brought him along. And eventually you knew he was going to get that opportunity. He got it with the Islanders and, you know, he's already familiar with that group. So I think it's actually a really good opportunity personally that the Jets, you know, you bring Barry Trotz in for 3 years, you hope that he wins you a Stanley Cup or he gets you. I mean, look, there's no guarantees anybody's going to win a Stanley Cup, but you've got the pieces in place. Maybe you make some additions, you know, maybe that gives him an opportunity to have more say in certain elements of the team, maybe more than a coach would as they try and give him that opportunity to quote, learn about the other side of the game. And I think you're not handing him Kevin Cheveldayoff's job necessarily, unless he shows that he's capable of doing it, right? You don't just say, look, there's how many times have we seen a guy who, because of their name, get something that they aren't necessarily, you know, qualified for. Sure. So, you know, if Barry Trotz can show that he has an understanding of the requirements of being a GM, well, then maybe that's something they're grooming him for while he's grooming his replacement. And I just think here's an opportunity for him to bring in, you know, a couple of new faces, a couple of new assistant coaches, that see a possibility of like, you know what? I want to learn from Barry Trotz, one of the greatest coaches in the NHL, in NHL history. I can learn from him. I can also bring, you know, my own expectations and know that, I mean, look, it's a big ask. Barry Trotz may decide he wants to go for 5 years, not three, but the expectation is, and I, we're coming up with these numbers, but I would think, you know, 2 or 3 years, probably 3 years of coaching. And then you give him that, that foot in the door, whether it's president of hockey operations, whether it's a assistant GM role here in Winnipeg, whatever it is, it's that ability, that it's that idea of stability within the organization and stability story within his life, for him to have his family know, okay, you're going to be here for minimum, you know, 5 years. I mean, obviously things can go off the rails, but the reality is that wouldn't be the expectation. So you have a guy who can groom his successor, and that doesn't necessarily mean he gets the job. I mean, there's also there's a possibility that person would be poached by another team, but I would think, if I knew I could come to Winnipeg, learn from a coach like Barry Trotz for 3 years and know that I get a good shot of being his replacement, potentially on a team that he's turned around and made a contender, that's a very enticing opportunity for assistant coaches as well.
And that's why, boys, I think it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, who the associate and assistant coaches are under, whether it's, you know, Barry Trotz or another coach. Obviously, we're talking about, you know, Trotz here, and then, you know, eventually, you know, joining
where Charlie Huddy fits into that picture. Well, as well.
Yeah, exactly, Drew. I mean, Drew's obviously, you know, joking here because Huddy's
tongue
been
in
around,
cheek, folks, tongue
right,
in cheek.
Right. And I mean, look, there always is the possibility that, you know, Huddy and Jamie Compan come back. I mean, it's just no right now, it doesn't seem likely because look at for, you know, for everybody, you know, who might question that out there. I mean, it's just, if you look at what head coaches, when a new head coach is hired, he almost always, There are exceptions, but almost always they bring in, you know, guys that are familiar. Dave mentioned Lane Lambert. Not only does Lane Lambert go back to the Washington days, Lane Lambert goes back to the Nashville days. So Trotz and Lambert have been close for a really long time. Look at, like, you know, Rick Bowness and Derek Laxdal in Dallas. Like, right, there's just so many examples, right? So that's why I think, you know, Pascal Vincent and Todd Woodcroft are going to be really interesting guys because don't those guys seem like the guys that you would want to bring in as associate coaches or, you know, assistant coaches under Trotz, because we know that Pascal Vincent has been knocking at the door for years to be an NHL head coach. He's young, right? And same thing goes for Todd Woodcroft. Like, I think, guys, that if the Jets don't end up hiring Trotz, which there is a good chance they do, I think Pascal Vincent and Todd Woodcroft have to be right at the top of that list. I realize there's, you know, the Kirk Mullers out there. You know, there's the other types of, you know, the Alain Vigneault's out there. But I think Woodcroft and Vincent, just because of their familiarity, and these are really smart hockey minds that have developed, you know, countless, you know, pro hockey players. I think those guys, you have to wonder, you know, if those are really strong candidates for assistant coach.
Well, I mean, I would have to think that at this point in time, Pascal Vincent, I mean, he, you know, when he went to Columbus last offseason to be the associate head coach or assistant head coach there, whatever the exact job title was, I think that came as a surprise to a lot of people. People, for the most part, thought he was going to remain as the Manitoba Moose head coach, and then he was the Jets' sort of next head coach in waiting. You wonder if he hadn't gone to Columbus last offseason, how the situation changes when Paul Maurice resigns, when he leaves the team in the middle of the season.
And I just wanted to say, Drew, that's why I agree with you. I think Pascal at this point wants to be an NHL head coach. I just think and that's why under the Trotz scenario, to Dave's point earlier, I think if you know that, you know, Trotz isn't going to be an NHL head coach forever, like whether it's 2 years, 3 years, whatever, I think, you know, that becomes a lot more attractive because, you know, okay, I'm going back to be the assistant coach of the Jets, but 2 or 3 years from now, you know, I'm going to be finally giving that, you know, head coach role that I've coveted for so long. So that's why I think there's the difference. But you're right. It's possible Pascal likes what's happening in Columbus, you know, with Lion A and all the good young players they have there, right? Werenski. So, I mean, you know, it's just something interesting to watch. But not sure if you wanted to get into Kirk Muller, guys. But, you know, Kirk Muller, I think, would be a very interesting, you know, coach. Look what, you know, he did with Calgary's young players and veteran. Like, look at Johnny Gaudreau. He's had a huge impact on, you know, turning Johnny Gaudreau around, among others, Mangiapane, right? So Kirk Muller, to me, is a really interesting one. He was a guy that we mentioned, but Elliot Friedman finally kind of confirmed that he was a guy that could be on the radar. So he's another guy, I think, to keep an eye on.
Well, and now that, you know, I think things are going to begin to ramp up a little bit more as we're through to the conference, finals, with the exception of the Rangers and the Hurricanes, of course, because I think, you know, the first two rounds, the focus is always on the teams that are playing, though. That's where your primary focus is. All the teams that aren't playing, that's where they're doing some of their due diligence. That's where they're doing some of their background work. That's where they're doing some of their preliminary efforts to figure out how they're going to get back on track. Now that you're down to the final four, there's a lot, you know, the vast majority of teams are out. The vast majority of assistant coaches that could potentially, be up for discussion are available. So a guy like Kirk Muller, you're not going to talk to him when the Flames are still playing. Well, the Flames, we know, were eliminated, you know, handily by the Edmonton Oilers in what has to be a disappointing effort, in Calgary from the perspective, given how good Calgary was all season long, to go out the way they did. So Kirk Muller in the next, you know, week or so, next couple weeks, would be more readily available to interview with teams, a team like the Jets, other teams. So I think you're going to begin to hear more about the state of coaching, throughout the league over the next couple of weeks as the playoffs begin to wind down.
I just saw Mark Sports video asked about Daryl Sutter. Like, I don't think Daryl Sutter is going anywhere.
No.
I think you guys would be pretty surprised. Look what he did with the team this year. Like, you know, you mentioned that the Oilers handled the Flames pretty handily. I agree, but like, could you not just insert, you know, Connor McDavid for the Oilers handling the Flames, you know, pretty easily? Like, yeah. McDavid went to another level, and he's already the best player, you know, on earth. And, you know, what he was doing in that series, I mean, there's no words to really do it justice, right?
And like, what about Ezzy? What about Draisaitl on 1 foot, 17 points in 5 games? I mean, it was 4 assists in that last game. I mean, yeah, they're what they're doing right now in Edmonton, Zach Hyman. I mean, it's an impressive effort, even given the goal that Mike Smith let in from 132 feet away.
I still can't believe that's real.
Well, no, I know. You could see that he just didn't see it.
In his defense, it really wasn't like the Salo goal. Like, I mean, it was hard to see, especially, it's funny because I remember I was listening to Don Cherry talk about Gary Cheevers hated when the Bruins would wear black because he would lose the puck and he wouldn't be able to see it. And he said, I don't like the black socks because I can't see the puck coming at me. And similarly, it's interesting how you could see the way, I mean, watching the replay, you could see the angle and the way the puck was coming. It was Smith had no idea. He had absolutely no idea. Anyways, so look, I think there's a lot of, I mean, let's be realistic for the people who are saying, who are worried that the Jets are going to pick Barry Trotz's assistants. Let's dismiss that. He will have the full luxury to pick whomever he wants. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean he wouldn't go with someone like Todd Woodcroft or Pascal Vincent. And, you know, to the point that Trini KP made, you know, Pascal Vincent is responsible for bringing up a lot of the young talent that is currently on this Jets team. You know, he did very well with the Moose in general. I mean, obviously there were some down years, but I mean, let me tell you, those were some bad teams. He played, you know what he did though? He played the youth, and that's what you wanted to see from a coach. And so, you know, and it's an interesting situation, of course, because, you know, Brad Larson's a young guy himself, and he doesn't look like he's going to be leaving the head coaching role in Columbus anytime soon. So while it would obviously be simply a lateral move, you know, his family still is here in Winnipeg, and would the opportunity to, knowing that this coach has a shelf, like a lifespan of only 2 or 3 years, does that make it more appealing? That's all I would say. Again, like I said, I think it ultimately will come down to, if you're a coach like Barry Trotz, you're not going to be told when you're the third winningest, you know, coach of all time, these are going to be your assistant coaches. It's not the way it works, people. He will make the decision. They may make suggestions. They may say, what do you think about person A? What do you think of person B? That might, you know, entice him to, you know, give them a look. But then he ultimately, at the end of the day, he is going to make a decision as to who his assistant coaches will be.
Right. And it ultimately comes down to, sorry, I was just going to say, I mean, it seemed like if originally a couple of weeks ago before the Islanders announced that Lane Lambert was going to be their head coach, first off, Lane Lambert was potentially an option as head coach for the Jets if he was going to be released from his contract, right? It just, I think what's interesting is it's not so obvious who the assistants and the associates are going to be, because we talked about it. Trotz and Lambert, they were like, you know, Don Henley and Joe Walsh or whatever, you know, whatever pair you want to use. Obviously, that's a bad example because those guys, I believe back in the day, had some pretty epic fights, but so of Drew and I, and we've lasted over 13 years, right? So no, but I think it's going to be interesting, just as interesting almost, guys, because like Drew mentioned earlier, I mean, Charlie Huddy has been with the Jets organization for 11 years. I mean, Jamie Compan has been with the Jets for what, 4 years?
I could see Jamie Compan coming back a lot easier than I could ever see Charlie
Huddy. I agree. Well, that's what I said. I mean, I think especially too, I mean, we know what happened, you know, off the ice with Jamie Compan's wife, right? So, but I just think, I mean, Compan is a great hockey coach. I mean, he is. I mean, his track record, you ask anybody, really smart hockey mind. So I agree with you. I think if it was between Compan and Huddy, it's more likely that Compan comes back. It's possible they both don't come back. But I think the point we're trying to make here, guys, is it's just not as obvious maybe, you know, as it was a few weeks back, you know, who the assistant associate coaches are going to be. Like, I'm not sure. I mean, apparently, you know, Todd Woodcroft loves being the head coach at the University of Vermont, but maybe, you know, he is interested in coming back, you know, as an assistant coach, but I imagine he'd like to be the head coach as well. So it really depends on, you know, what happens with Trotz. We know that, right, guys? Like, the big fish right now is Trotz. We're waiting to see, you know, if he signs with the Winnipeg Jets. But after that, I mean, I think there's no real front runner. I don't think he would say, like, you know, Pascal Vincent is the front runner over, you know, Kirk Muller or Alain Vigneault or Scott Arneil. I think after Trotz, it's kind of anybody's guess, you know, who emerges as a potential Jets head coach.
I would agree with that, Ezzy. I think it is a wide open field. And I mean, everybody, certainly the fan base has most, you know, most everybody in the fan base has all of their eggs in the Trotz basket. And they're, you know, and you can see, I mean, True North also knows this. They're not silly people. They're not dumb people. They know that getting Trotz under contract, as we talked about previously, is going to be a boon for the excitement level and will be a positive for a team,
which is ironic given the way his style of teams usually plays, that
winning solves everything.
And I know what you meant, Drew. I'm just saying, it's just funny.
Yeah, exactly. It is humorous. And then, you know, people say, oh, they might be boring, but if they're winning, then it doesn't matter. Then it's effective. I mean,
Barry Trotz is like the Connor McDavid of coaches. I really don't think it's ridiculous to say that. Maybe I'm biased here because he's from Manitoba, but like, just, guys, the Stanley Cup with Washington, I mean, Dave's repping the beautiful Manitoba shirt purchased in Clear Lake, Manitoba. But just Barry Trotz was the Nashville Predators organization, right? Like, year after year, getting that team into the playoffs. We talked about that. Like, that wasn't a team that had Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl or, you know, Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen. And like, you're talking about a team that was a bunch of, like, it was like the David Legwans and the Kimmo Timonens. And the Craig Smiths and those type of players, right? So, I mean, if the Jets were able to get Trotz, I agree. I think there's no question that's who Jets fans want the most. And at the end of the day, yeah, Jets fans are the ones that buy season tickets and individual tickets. That's not to say that, you know, if the Jets don't get Trotz, they won't hire the right guy. But I think that there is going to be a certain segment of the Jets, you know, fandom that is really disappointed and doesn't think that, you know, whoever the Jets end up hiring as head coach is going to be, you know, at the same level, you know, as Trotz. But I would say that whether we're talking about Pascal Vincent, Woodcroft, Kirk Muller, Scott Arneil, I mean, there's a lot of good options here, guys, as Jets head coach. I just don't think any of these guys have the same, they don't even come close to having the same resume as Trotz.
The only one who injects a dose of excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And with it, you know, expectations, don't get me wrong. So it's not, you know, that he gets a clean slate and the team can struggle under him. You know, he injects a dose of offseason excitement as Barry Trotz. Everybody else will be, okay, you're not Barry Trotz. Prove it to me that you have what it takes to get this team back on track. So there's, you know, it's a difficult situation for any head coach to walk into. As we've talked about, this is not an easy situation. You have a dressing room, which in my estimation is in a bit of upheaval. I think that, you know, you guys would probably agree with that, given how last year ended and all the comments.
Well, so the players said that themselves, right? So it's right. This isn't like a creation of the media or a creation of a legal curve. We heard that from the players themselves.
That's right. So, I mean, it is not an easy situation that whomever is going to be walking into, which makes it all the more of a fascinating situation to follow over the coming weeks. And who knows how much longer it's going to be. It could be another week. It could be another 2 weeks. It could be today. stranger things have happened, but everything always happens on Saturday mornings on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, as you all know that. This opening segment was brought to you by our friends at Betway, one of the most trusted voices in sports betting, both in Canada and all around the world. Betway is the sports betting app that puts you, the customer, at the forefront. With a large selection of betting options and sports, as well as strong promotions and fair odds, what are you waiting for? Head on over to Betway and bet your way. Must be 19 years or older to play. Please, and I can't stress this enough, play responsibly. When we come back, the eloquent one, Murat Ateş, is going to join us for more Jets talk. And as we've been promoting in the second hour, an hour from now, Jets goaltender Eric Comrie joins the program. Stay with us. It's a Saturday morning. You're live with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. 9:30 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and our very good friend Murat Ateş from The Athletic joins us on the program as well. Murat, can you hear us first and foremost? I think he cannot hear us for some reason, is what I'm...
Unfortunately, we can hear you, Drew.
Yeah, that's usually a problem when everyone else can hear me, but for some reason, Murat cannot hear us. Murat, we'll let you resolve those audio difficulties that I think you are experiencing.
To be honest with you, it's probably better that Murat doesn't hear us, right? Like, we just need to hear him speak.
That's fair enough. We can see him. We can wave at you. Can you wave at us, Murat? Do you see it? There you go. Okay, you're waving. But we have an audio difficulty that we'll let Murat maybe work his way through for some reason. I'm not sure why the audio is not working on your end there, Mr. Ateş. But hopefully...
I agree with Ezzy. That's pretty brutal. He has to listen to us and he can't even respond. What a terrible situation.
Yeah.
This is the new thing with invited
guests. It's a form of torture, if you ask me.
Exactly. We can't hear you. The mic's not working for some reason, Murat. We'll let you. Yeah, I think it's on your end.
Maybe well, just tell him to test his speakers and audio. You can do that.
Turn speakers and audio, Murat. Okay, let's keep talking about the Jets while we get Murat to figure out what's going on that end, because I'm not sure why it's not working. Maybe log in and log out, Murat, and see if that helps anything. There he goes.
That was a great appearance by him. I have to say that was one of my favorite appearances of all time he's ever had on our show.
Smooth operation, as you can see, where we have going on here. So hopefully Murat will...
Maybe he felt he answered all the questions in his mailbag. It's two mailbags, and so as a result, right, didn't need to.
Let's see if we add him back. Does this help at all? Can you hear us now, Murat?
I can hear you.
There we go.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. How are you, good sir?
Well, you know, this is my first video chat, and I'm nervous for how this will go. The idea that I can even see you guys across the screen is magic to me. Hearing... seeing, speak, it's a time, and I'm just grateful to be here with you guys.
Rod, it's like March 2020 when everybody was figuring Zoom out, right? Like, it was this new thing, like, do I have to have my camera on? Where's the mute button? Do people do virtual backgrounds? Like, this is we've gone back in time.
yeah, all those horrors are like, yeah, there's so many. But it's 2022 now, it's May, you know, it's not winter anymore. We have potholes now, and I should be ready for this.
There we go. Let's get into it, Murat. Obviously, we spent the first 30 minutes of the show talking about the Jets head coaching situation, because that is the cloud that hangs over everything. Not necessarily a cloud, but the question mark that hangs over a lot of things this offseason. And, you know, we were talking about some people were expecting some movement this past week. Nothing has happened on the trots front yet. You know, from your perspective, are you expecting things to start picking up over the next week or 2 weeks now that more teams have been eliminated from the playoffs and more interview opportunities, I would say, are coming available?
I do. Yeah, I never expected something this week. But at this point, you know, Trotz will have had a few more of his interviews under his belt, and he'll be sizing up whatever opportunities come out of, you know, any eliminated teams or what have you. I mean, as recently as I think it was Monday, his camp shared with me that they were still working on setting up new interviews. And that was when Philadelphia and Detroit and Vegas were already known, right? So we'll see where he's able to go there. I think Dallas is also a reasonable place for that he would have an interview, and I think that's a pretty good fit for him as well. So when you're the number one free agent on the market and you're genuinely figuring out what you want in so many ways, and you know, I think that there's some truth to this idea that you'd like to see a route into management or front office work in the long run. So, I mean, these are big decisions. He's got big family decisions as well, all those sorts of things. I think there's a genuine sense of listening to every situation and figuring out how that fits with what it is that works for him. So, at this point, you know, a few days have gone by since Trotz's watch really intensified coming out of that long weekend. Maybe now heading into next week, maybe the week after that or what have you, I think it is starting to get more realistic that even though he's taking his time, and I still believe that that's the mode that he's in, we'll get there eventually. You know, when June hits, it's going to be time.
Now, Murat, just kind of, you know, sticking with Trotz watch, and, you know, mentioned the mailbag, and there were some good, great ground covered. And obviously that's why you had to come out in a couple parts. And we need to ask you about Pierre-Luc Dubois. And hopefully that'll be me, but it might be Dave or Drew. But just sticking with Trotz and that idea of him, you know, transitioning into a management role, do you see that being more of that president of hockey operations role? Is it more of an assistant general manager? Like, you know, you throw in maybe director of player, what do you know right now about kind of what Barry Trotz wants out of that managerial role? Because obviously that could take on many forms.
You know, I don't know enough to suggest a name of title myself, but the idea that I keep coming back to when I think about it is that we know that Barry Trotz has been, you know, an elite head coach for a number of years, right? We don't know his track record in management since I think the 80s and the Dauphin Kings, unless I'm missing a chapter. So I think that there's some areas for growth, and I know that he would have had, you know, some influence. I mean, conversations get happened in player movement, right? You know, Kevin Chevalier would have asked Paul Maurice what he thought before signing Matt Hendricks, that kind of stuff. But I think there's going to be a transition period where if you're Winnipeg and you're able to get this to work, you progressively bring in Barry Trotz into more and more of your decision-making meetings. And then from that point, after being in those meetings, you can incorporate his voice more into the actual decision making, and maybe after a little bit of time you can sort of decide almost what direction it goes, whether there's an AGM position for him, whether he becomes a general manager even after that, and perhaps Kevin Cheveldayoff becomes president of hockey operations, or the other way around, or what have you. I think that with something as big as that, and presumably working over a couple years of coaching contract as well, there's a lot of room to really step by step integrate somebody progressively, kind of based on how all of those steps go. That's kind of how I see it unfolding, but that's just me trying to imagine what the best practices might be, as opposed to just walking him right into that title. That seems a little bit premature to me personally.
Saturday morning, we're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by our good friend, Murat Atesh. He covers the Winnipeg Jets for The Athletic.
Murat, over in Finland, Pierre-Luc Dubois is having himself quite the tournament. 7 goals, 5 assists. One of the goals critical, of course, for that comeback against Sweden, the secondary assist on the OT winner. So he's having himself quite the summer already. And obviously that's really big, building on what he was able to do here in his second season in Winnipeg. One of the headlines from the mailbag, of course, was a Pierre-Luc Dubois offer sheet, ? So I'm going to ask you to give for free what you wrote about on The Athletic, but what was your sense in terms of the offer sheet and how realistic a possibility that is? And just so you know, I read it because I pay for The Athletic, but I'm just asking you to share your insight.
Everybody who watches this show, everybody who watches Murat's appearances on all the different YouTube broadcasts, they all pay for The Athletic if they know what's good for them.
Murat, I had an Athletic subscription before when it was only Chicago, I think Chicago and Toronto. I had an Athletic subscription. That's so true. That goes back to like 2016, 17.
Here's a trivia question.
I was a trendsetter.
Here's a trivia question. Do you know who the first NHL writer for The Athletic was?
Scott Powers?
Scott Powers. There you go, Dave M. Well done. Sorry. Well, there you go.
Wow. You guys go back before I did. I think it was when the Canadian expansion happened that I signed up for everything, and then Winnipeg became an option to run. Wow, you guys.
Scott used to write for ESPN. We're going way off tangent here, but that's what we do. Scott used to write for ESPN.com covering the Blackhawks, and he was a frequent guest of ours on the Dear Departed radio station. And when Scott, and so I was emailing with him, and he said, "Hey, I've left ESPN.com. I'm working for this thing now called The Athletic." And at that time, who knew what it was going to end up being? But there you go. There's a little bit of the backstory for those who are wanting to keep track for whatever odd reason.
Yeah, if you're a media nerd and you want to. So, Pierre Dubois, here's what I think. I think that any offer sheet is more likely not to happen than to happen. And I think that we've seen that over the years. There are just so few of them. It's kind of fun that Montreal and Carolina have been involved in their little, you know, battle over the last couple of years, Kotkaniemi and everything else like that. So, you know, we're starting to see it, and we're starting to see it from a couple of particular teams who I guess it's fun to watch their grudges play out. I think Montreal has shown that they're willing to do something like that. So that's kind of interesting. But still, more likely not to happen than happen, even though I think it's possible. That's how I would describe it. And the reason is, you know, the simplest thing that Pierre-Luc Dubois could do, whether he's looking to sign in Winnipeg for a single year so that they'd have one more crack at it next summer, or whether he's looking to sign that 7 or 8 year deal right now, the single easiest thing he could do would be to file for arbitration by the July deadline. And all that does is it guarantees that Winnipeg has him under contract, because as soon as he files for arbitration, he cannot be signed to an offer sheet. That's a pretty smooth and simple play. They can keep negotiating, whether it's a long-term deal or a one-year deal, right up until that hearing begins, probably in August or whenever the date for that would eventually get set. And to me, that seems like a good idea for a lot of reasons. One, if he wants to play somewhere else, a one-year arbitration deal, well, we see how that goes. I mean, if you're Andrew Kopp, or if you're, Jacob Trouba would be the best example of that, and then you play your way to within a year of free agency, you end up getting that trade. I mean, that's, we've seen it, and you can still be a good soldier and a good teammate during that time. So that's one option. Or if he wants to make himself available to another team and he really has it in his heart that that's the route that he wants, then a long-term contract with good terms and a number of years in stability. I mean, for a 23-year-old player like Pierre-Luc Dubois, if I'm another team, I'd like to see him under a good contract as opposed to having to inherit all of that uncertainty of, okay, well, he's a restricted free agent. He's eligible for UFA status 2 years from now or what have you. And of course, the third, the happiest route is that Winnipeg hires the coach of their dreams, the roster becomes great, any issues from last year are ironed up, and Pierre-Luc Dubois thinks to himself, hey, I'm signing for 7 or 8 years at the prime of my career right here in Winnipeg. And I think that that's not super likely as we sit here this moment either. But all of these things are possible at this stage. And that's why we walked through every last detail of what an offer sheet path could look like in my latest, which you all should read. And I think Mark was the name who said I subscribed for Murat. So thank you, Mark.
Yeah. You know, from the Jets' perspective, unless, I mean, Montreal goes absolutely haywire, or any team, I shouldn't say Montreal, any team goes absolutely haywire, determines that, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois is a, you know, is a $10.5 million player, which just the numbers don't bear that out, and his trajectory doesn't bear that out in any which way. It's hard to see sort of any contract that the Jets not really matching. I mean, I think that an offer sheet, if he was to sign one, if he was to be offered one and to sign one, I think the Jets would, for the most part, gladly accept that and you know, say, thanks for doing some of the dirty work for us, whomever you are in the NHL. I mean, that's my perspective on it, right?
I would see it the same way up until about that last tier, the 10.5 and up, let's call it, and then you get 4 first-round picks in return for that. It's pretty much an automatic match for Winnipeg. Even if it's something like 10.2, you admit that the compensation isn't enough in terms of draft picks. And then the thing that you admit is that you're paying a prime-aged career a couple of million above what his market value should be. And, you know, a team can withstand one of those contracts. For sure it can. Ideally, you do that to a player in their mid-20s as opposed to their late 30s, which, you know, we've seen some contracts get signed. But a team can withstand that. You just admit it's not market value and you move on because he's a good player. Yeah. But I agree, probably 7 or 8 is probably a little bit more in line. The only crazy plays I can think of that, you know, aside from going well beyond 10.5 or even going well beyond 10.5 would be something incredibly short term, like 1 year or 2 years, even risking walking him straight to unrestricted free agency with a stupid number, call it 12, call it something like that. That's purely poaching money. And then perhaps he signs for less after that. But again, that's extremely speculative. And, you know, an offer sheet itself, I think, is less likely than certain. And then a play like that is less likely, I think, within that as well. So I'm with you, Drew. I don't see him easily being poached from Winnipeg because they value him.
Absolutely. And I think we need to kind of transition into, and I thought it was really, it was astute on your part to tie in Scheifele and Dubois, right? Because, I mean, you make a good point. The two are not unrelated. I mean, what happens with Dubois can affect Scheifele. But going under the assumption that, you know, Scheifele is moved, I wanted to ask you about something we talked about last week. Like, if you're moving Mark Scheifele, is there a way that you don't get a top six center back? And obviously there is. The Jets could easily trade Scheifele for a top two defenseman or a combination of players. I think you would agree that, you know, you probably wouldn't want to, you know, bring in, you know, prospects for Scheifele. How are you replacing his 80 points? But do you see any options, built-in options for the Jets right now? Like, obviously, Cole Perfetti's a really young player, you know, suffered the injuries at the end of the year. But, like, is that unheard of that you could see, you know, Cole Perfetti be the Jets' second-line center next year? I realize that, you know, that's putting quite a bit of pressure and responsibility on a player. Do you think that's ridiculous? Do you think it's kind of almost a foregone conclusion that Perfetti's going to be a winger? Like, what do you think about that, Murat? Like, does Scheifele, do you need to get a center back if Scheifele is traded?
I think you need to get a center back if the play is to win now. And the reason I say that for me is because I agree with you. You miss his production the moment he goes out the door. And I have qualms about Scheifele's defensive effort. I have qualms about his defensive results. But, you know, whether it's the power play, whether it's what he can do 5-on-5 offensively, you will miss that. There's no way around it. And Winnipeg's better off if it gets the best Mark Scheifele and the best Pierre-Luc Dubois, because that's the 1-2 punch. And it would genuinely, if everybody's getting 100% out of themselves, that would be a really dynamic group. So if you move Scheifele and you keep everybody else, you're trying to win presently. You know, if you move Scheifele and you don't also move Dubois, you don't move Connor Hellebuyck, and you sort of, then you need somebody to play in the middle. I worry about asking Cole Perfetti to do that right away. Like you say, there's been some injury trouble this year, so that's kind of one thing for me. He doesn't have a full season of NHL under his belt because of that, and because, of course, he played for the Moose as well. And even with the Moose, right, didn't he ride shotgun for David Gustafson for most of that? So I think at his pro level, that's just asking too many steps at once, right? Like, I don't think you can take Logan Stanley from the Moose a year and a bit ago and then ask him to play on the top pair or the top four. That's why you put him on the third pairing. That's one step at a time. I think with Cole Perfetti, a full NHL season or moving into center kind of intermittently in parts in a lower down the lineup capacity, would be the stepwise approach that I think would be more ideal for him. And I just worry that if you're asking a young player without that NHL center experience to be your second line center, you're heading for that almost that Montreal route, right? Like, or an Ottawa route where there's some gifted young players playing so many important minutes, but you're also flirting. I'm not saying that one move makes Winnipeg a lottery team, but if you do rely too much on those sorts of situations, you are sort of flirting with being in development mode as opposed to winning as soon as I think Winnipeg wants to.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, Murat Ateş of The Athletic is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Reminder coming up at the bottom of hour number two, Winnipeg Jets goaltender Eric Comrie joins the show.
No, Murat, you're 100% right. And we saw it with Jack Rozovic, right? Jack Rozovic played center for the Moose for predominantly his entire AHL career. And then the final 10 games, he mysteriously moved over to wing. And then suddenly he was a winger up in the NHL. So, and you're right. Perfetti was on the wing with David Gustafson quite a bit this season when he was playing with the Moose. So the likelihood of him making that jump and playing center seems unlikely given the way the organization has worked. Of course, with new minds, who knows how they'll proceed, of course. So we don't know because we don't have any history. We don't have anybody to base history on, of course, yet. But that's something that'll obviously have to be factored in and measured based on training camp. You know, the one thing I wanted to talk to you about, though, because you talked about culture issues in your first mailbag, and it's that idea, you know, just of how vocal everyone was, and that's well documented. We've talked about that quite a bit on the show about the way the players spoke at the in the week-long kind of end of the season, which we've never seen before. It was quite unique this year. But one of the things that, you know, like we heard the dribs and drabs we got from guys like Friedman was just the idea of a guy like they're like Connor Hellebuyck is happy to be there as long as they're going for it, as long as they're winning. Well, Connor Hellebuyck isn't necessarily a name that people even had thought of as someone who was less than pleased. So is that a heavy concern? The idea that, you know, again, there's names that are coming out that aren't, you know, obviously there's always that in the background, right? You always hear, oh, this guy's not happy, that guy's not happy. But when it becomes more vocal, when it becomes more out there, again, how important is it to have someone who's going to be able to, and that's why I think a vet, everybody's got their blinders on for Barry Trotz, because they think from a cultural perspective, he can really go in there and kind of reset what's going on in this Jets room.
Yeah, and Barry Trotz would be fun for a goalie too, I think, because you've seen so many examples of goalies having career years under him because the defensive structure is so good. I mean, it's a rare coach, despite we all know, I mean, play good defense, it'll be easier for a goaltender, but it's a rare coach that over a season's body of work, you'll actually find goaltenders tend to do better. There's usually too many bounces, too much chaos. I mean, of course, he's also not a magician. He can't change who the players are in playing in front. But Barry Trotz has had that impact improving goaltenders' fortunes. And I don't want to get too carried away with that, because what if a more reasonable improvement, like let's say they hire Barry Trotz and Connor Hellebuyck has a good year as opposed to an amazing one. And I don't want to promise things that I cannot promise. But I think that a real concerted effort defensively will give Connor Hellebuyck a much better time. If you keep Connor Hellebuyck, again, what you're saying is you're not rebuilding, because as soon as you're rebuilding, you can't have a goaltender that good because you need to give up standing points, right? But if you're Hellebuyck, you look at that Vezina trophy winning season in 2020, where I think he saved Winnipeg from a bottom 10 or perhaps a lottery finish. You know, he was perhaps the best player in the NHL that year in terms of the impact that he had on wins. And then you look at what's happened since then, and they haven't really been able to put it all the way together. I think that it's completely reasonable for Connor Hellebuyck to sort of say, hey, like, as long as the plan is to win, that's the only thing that matters to him. I believe him when he says that. So that doesn't ruffle feathers with me in terms of projecting the future. The one thing that does is 2024, he's scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent. And however happy
he is, coming quick.
That's coming quick. And you have a top-level goalie who will be approaching 30 years old. We don't know how to project goaltenders perfectly. We know, I'm sure he's headed for a raise above his current salary as well. So his future is important to monitor, even aside from any comment he could make, because he's such an important foundational player. His contract's coming up. And then also you need Winnipeg to have confidence in his goaltending for years and years. So that's something to watch. I really think it is.
I think I agree with you. It's a sort of a fascinating subplot to keep an eye on over the next couple of years, certainly, or the next year and a bit before it'll really start to heat up. You know, Murad, looking at the defense for the Jets, because we know that the defensive play has been an issue for years on end at this point in time. We also know that the bulk of the Jets' best prospects, or a lot of their prospects, are coming up on the defensive side of the game. You know, you look at the six Jets defense who are at the NHL level right now, and I'd say Morrissey, Schmidt, Pionk, Dylan, DeMello, and Stanley. Those are the six guys listed on Cap Friendly on the NHL side of the ledger. Of those six, if I have to put you on the spot, who do you think's not coming back next year, if any?
That is a tough question. If any, let's start with me hedging there, because good. One route for the Winnipeg Jets is to trade youth for present help. If they go all the way away from the rebuild and they're like, hey, Connor Hellebuyck, we're doing everything we can to win now. You know, let's get a top line right wing or something like that. And we're going to trade Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg. I'm not saying that's what's happening, but that is a route available to Winnipeg. Sure. If somebody goes, it really has to be one of Nate Schmidt, Brendan Dillon, or Dylan DeMello. Nate Schmidt, because of his contract, will be tougher to trade, but more appealing to trade if you're Winnipeg, I think, to make cap space. And then Brendan Dillon and Dylan DeMello, I mean, good contracts, good ages, good situations where I think under the right system, they could actually help Winnipeg quite a lot for their contract value. So that you sort of go into the pros and cons of that. And defense, above any other part of the game, you know, above how many points players score, above the offensive contributions, defense depends on systems and coaching. And you see that when you go analytically, because defensive impact, just a player's ability to cut down on chances against, doesn't follow them from one team to another or one coach to another as much as offensive impact does. So that decision, I know you put me on the spot to say a name and I'm using all this time, but that decision is tougher. It's going to be tougher than it looks. I don't think it can be as simple as who had a bad year or who had a minus or something like that, because systemically is going to impact how all of these guys perform, depending on which coach is asking for what. And then it's likely, again, I'm so optimistic, I guess, but let's say it's Barry Trotz. It's likely that everybody's metrics look better. And then maybe it becomes about the cap and then Nate Schmidt's the cap casualty. And that's the answer I got to go with. But I think it's going to be nuanced because there's room for improvement systemically and in so many different ways for that Jets blue line.
Let me just sort of add on to that question. If it is Nate Schmidt, you know, is that at a just under a $6 million cap hit for the next 3 years? Can the Jets get an asset in return for him, or is it more of a salary dump given, you know, where his play has gone, where his numbers have gone for the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, I think you're looking at depth picks or mid-round picks for that at this stage, which is unfortunate because he can do a lot of things well still. And also, obviously, we would miss him like heck. The room would miss him like heck. Ville Heinola, right? He told you guys at exit interviews with the Moose that he felt really comfortable with the Moose, and then also he singled out a couple of Jets. Well, Brendan Dillon and Nate Schmidt looked out for him in, you know, all year. You could see it in practice, maybe working with him after or what have you. So that's also an important consideration in some ways, perhaps.
Yeah, I think you make, when you just going back to Drew's question about, you know, what defenseman could possibly be moved, I think you make a lot of good points there. There isn't an obvious one, right? Like, we know the Jets are stronger on the left side when it comes to prospects with, I mean, we know who the guys are, and you're right. I mean, the easy cap casualties would be Schmidt and Dillon, but you're taking out two really good veteran defensemen out of your top six, Barat. So I think you're right. I think there are a lot of considerations, salary cap maybe being, you know, one of the big ones, but I think it's not as easy as just naming one defenseman. So that was a bad question, Mindell. But no, I'm just kidding. But, you know, I last question for you here, Murat. I wanted to ask you, I mean, tonight at 7 o'clock Central, we've got game six between the Rangers and Hurricanes. And, you know, if you believe in home records, the Rangers are going to win that game because it's really bizarre. Carolina, one of the, you know, best teams in the Eastern Conference, they can't win a game on the road. They can only win at home. So a lot of Jets fans are hoping that the Rangers are able to win tonight and then win again on Monday, because of course that means the Jets get the first round pick. And I wanted to ask you, what do you see Chevy doing with that pick, aside from the obvious, just having two first round picks? Like, does that change anything? Do you see him, you know, using that to maybe move up to acquire assets? Like, what do you see on the whole, you know, potential of getting that second round pick from the Rangers in the Kopp trade?
Yeah, for me, it's going to be a boring answer because, I mean, in the lead up to all the previous drafts, one thing I keep harping on is Winnipeg has traded picks away and traded picks away. And if you go from 2017, when they swapped picks with Vegas and Vegas took Suzuki, Winnipeg took Vesalainen as part of retaining Toby Enstrom for that, what became a great playoff run. If you go back to then, that year, Winnipeg has more or less sacrificed picks. 2018, they trade a first. 2019, they trade a first. And depth picks as well. I mean, the Winnipeg Jets haven't made a lot of picks. I think that if you're Winnipeg now, you need to supplement that pipeline. And I think that as much as excitement as I would get from, you know, multiple picks being traded, or even let's say using that first to pick up 2 seconds or 2 seconds and something even later than that, if by way of trying to really augment that prospect core and that draft pick catalog, I think the simplest and easiest answer is make the pick. You know, you're going to have 14 and 20, whatever, and you just hope like heck that your scouts are ready to go Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic 2015 all over again, which is an incredibly tough ask. So pardon me, Jets scouts, but I think that would be the dream if you're Winnipeg.
Murat Atesh covers the Winnipeg Jets for TheAthletic.com. In case you missed any of his great content, he's got a couple mailbags up from earlier this week, and I'm sure he's got some great content in the pipeline.
And I was just going to, you know, say to end this, we were going down, you know, memory lane with the, you know, the beginnings of The Athletic. I think when I first met Murat, I there was a commercial airing, and I had to do a kind of double take. So if you want to go back, and I don't know, I imagine Murat, it's on YouTube, but just check it out. Murat is kind of a big deal, you know, being in television commercials. So check that out.
I will offer you no YouTube help on that front.
Somebody's going to have to do the research on their own, right?
That's right.
Don't give anybody tips, Petland.
Some bland, yeah.
Murat, thank you, buddy.
Before I go, one sentence. This feels like I'm the opening act in like a nice guy headlining tour, right? Like I'm the moderately pleasant one. Eric Comrie is like the nicest person you could ever hope to have. Thank you for letting me open for Eric today, guys.
Look, compared to the three of us, you and Eric are head and shoulders in terms
saints.
Of quality above
you guys are saints.
The three of us. Yeah, you're saints and the rest of us are sort of the dregs of the of society trying to keep things entertaining.
Oh gosh. Well, thanks
on
so
that
much.
Note.
Thanks, cheers, Murat. Thanks for coming
have
on.
Have a great weekend, buddy.
You too.
Okay, Murat Atesh from The Athletic joining us on the program. When we come back, more Jets talk. Eric Comrie joining us at the bottom of the hour as well. Stay with us. It's a Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club. Bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. But why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. I'm sorry. That was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey! Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs from restorative to cosmetic dentistry and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. A big thanks to Murat Atesh for joining us to talk about the Jets still to come. Eric Comrie at the bottom of the hour. You guys like that? I was able to figure out how to...
I felt like I was like having an out-of-body experience. I'm like, am I the only one who's hearing music? I was like checking other tabs in my browser. I'm like, did I leave something on? Because I'm hearing music. You're not saying anything. Ezzy's not saying anything. I'm like,
I want to see how long I can confuse you for. I figured out a way to incorporate some music so that I can fade it out when we come back from break.
You're just quite the puppet master, Drew.
I just, you know, I got great thing.
Drew, you know what I really enjoy? Having more stuff to edit out of the show after the show. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You don't have to edit it. Barely anybody could hear it. It's no big deal. It's not interrupting anything. Just let it roll, Mr. Manuk. Now, I have a question for Ezra. Ezra, if you are known as the guy who spends his Sundays traveling around Manitoba, and then that same guy decides to go to Ontario for a Sunday, does that make you a traitor, or does that make you still the king of Manitoba travel?
Are you talking to me or are you talking to Dave, Drew? Because I'm not the one that travels on
Sundays.
I'm
asking you your opinion about
somebody. And I'm not sure what you're referencing either, because I'm not sure who went to Ontario. I don't know if you did. I mean, you were just in Ottawa, so I'm not quite sure what your angle is here. But no, I mean, why is that? You're not a traitor. I mean, you're going to Ontario is a beautiful province as well. I mean, we know how nice Lake of the Woods area is. So I'm not sure. What are you talking about here?
Dave.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
You said you weren't going to travel Manitoba this weekend. You're going away to Northwestern Ontario. So I want to know if that makes you a traitor to your travel Manitoba journeys.
Oh, Drew. First of all, no, because Northwestern Ontario, and eventually we will annex them. Rat Portage, aka Kenora. They've wanted to join Manitoba for years. It's only a matter of time. We'll get Dryden, probably Thunder Bay too. They all want to be part of Manitoba. So it's all incorporated. It's all part of the shield. So I'm good.
Okay. Fair enough. That was just the question I had. I wanted to see.
Plus, I'll still most likely hit Salties on Sunday, so we're still good in that regard.
Okay, that's quite the.
I'll get back to the interlake,
but you know, you'll go
through Canada is a free country. You're you know welcome to travel to any one of our 10 great provinces or 3 territories.
Yeah, there you go. Your geography lessons are paying off for you there in spades, there, Mr. Manuk. Murat addressed this in his...
I would change my last name to Manuk in a second, by the way.
Yeah. I think they have a restraining order to prevent you from doing that. They have an injunction against you changing your last name to Manuk. Murat addressed this in his mailbag. We didn't get a chance to talk to him about it specifically. I'm talking about the comments that James Patrick made, Winnipeg Ice head coach. He made on a podcast a few weeks ago, saying that the Winnipeg Jets dressing room has been, you know, one of the worst dressing rooms for years, that both Kevin Hayes and Cody Eakin said that it's the worst dressing room they've ever been in, that it's been divided for 5 years. Sort of a two-part question to you guys. One, what do you think about those comments? Because you don't usually hear things like that so blatantly put out there on display. And then second of all, if that's the case, can that be resolved with the same people in the room, or do you need to begin to look at the, you look at the makeup of that room? And that ties into the Scheifele question marks, and that ties into the Dubois question marks, and it ties into everything along those lines as this offseason continues to play out over the next couple weeks.
Well, I'm not a sports psychologist, so we'll have to get Dr. Cal Botterill in here if you really want a sports psychologist, Drew. I'm obviously joking, but I mean, the first part that you asked about the James Patrick comments, I believe that was Tom Laidlaw's show or podcast. Right. I'm not sure, you know, if you mentioned that earlier, Drew, but
Tom Laidlaw.
We all saw that on social media. I believe they removed it. I think it's still out there You know,
can never remove anything from the internet, Ezzy.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody probably saved it. So, but I think that he, you know, removed it. First off, I mean, if you mentioned you wanted to talk about this, Drew, it was bizarre because at the time the Ice were in the first round of the WHL playoffs, and I'm not sure why, you know, James Patrick was asked or was talking about the Jets, because I mean, that to me was odd in and of itself, right? Like, when you have James Patrick on a show, whether it's Winnipeg Sports Talk or our show or any other show, I mean, you want to talk about the Ice. I mean, I'm not asking, you know, all due respect to James Patrick, I'm not asking James Patrick, you know, for insight on the Jets. He's a WHL head coach. And I'm not sure if you guys agree with that or not. I thought that was weird that we were even, you know, talking about the Jets with James Patrick. There's not really, aside from Patrick being from Winnipeg and, you know, obviously being around a lot of pro hockey players, I'm not really sure why, you know, you would think he would be a good, you know, a good, provide good insight. Let's put it that way. So that was weird. What he said is no different than what we've heard, you know, for years with this Jets dressing room. And you have to look no further than, you know, the end of season interviews, mm-hmm. right? When you saw players like Mark Scheifele and Paul Stastny, Blake Wheeler, I mean, Nikolai Ehlers before that, Neil Pionk, a bunch of Jets were talking about how, you know, this team just didn't seem like they were on the all on the same page for the majority of the year. But, you know, when you're talking about and references made, you know, to Cody Eakin and Kevin Hayes, I mean, you're talking about guys that weren't part of the Jets for that long, right? So their experience in the Jets dressing room is limited to what, a month, 2 months, 3 months. So I'm not saying that, you know, what James Patrick was saying was wrong or incorrect. I just think that, you know, you have to take it, you know, with a grain of salt in terms of, you know, that dressing room, Drew. I mean, I think the head coach is going to have a big impact on that, but the players themselves, I think, and you know, Mark Scheifele is the obvious one where, you know, there's a good chance that he's traded, or there's, you know, somewhat of a chance, let's put it at that he's traded. I mean, he's a big one. He's been with this team, you know, since he was drafted in 2011. Obviously, he went back to junior and all that, but you guys know what I mean. He's been a full-time Jet for, let's call it, you know, 7 years, 8 years, whatever it is. So, I mean, what happens with that, I think, is going to have a big impact on that, in terms of, you know, just him being one of the leaders on this team. But I mean, look at like a coach can't just come, whether it's Barry Trotz or not. I mean, a coach can't kind of come in there and just say, okay, everybody play nice. Let's all get along. I mean, there's a lot of different personalities. There's veteran players, there's younger players, but there's no doubt that I think that the players themselves, you know, whatever they have to work out amongst themselves, I think a coach has a limited impact. You guys might disagree, and people watching might disagree as well. But I mean, these are adults. Like, when you're talking about guys in their late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s, you know, a coach can have an impact. There's no doubt about that. Barry Trotz is known as a player's coach. He's a guy, one of his strong suits is identifying roles, communication, just holding guys accountable. So yeah, could he help with some of those issues in the dressing room? Yes. But to me, the players themselves bear a lot of that responsibility.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking dressing room culture, that's, I think, incumbent on the players. The coaches can only, you know, the coaches don't spend a lot of time with the players in the dressing room. It's not like, you know, they're sitting around there, you know, cracking beers with the players after the games. It's incumbent on the players themselves to largely lead the dressing room culture. You know, has there been enough noise this offseason, Dave? And I don't mean noise, you know, pejoratively. I mean noise in terms of legitimate criticism. Has there been enough of it that the players themselves and the leadership group, whomever considers themselves in the leadership group, realize that the status quo needs to change?
Well, I mean, I think ultimately, and I think I saw this comment in the chat earlier, I think winning will change a lot of this. I think that if you can get someone, that's why it's ironic, right? Because we always talk about this team needs, you know, a head coach that they can respect. They need a head coach that is going to inject some, you know, legitimacy. A guy like Barry Trotz, who has a Stanley Cup to his name. The irony, of course, is none of these guys have anything to their name from at the pro level, really. What has Blake Wheeler done at the pro level other than accumulate a lot of points? Has he won a Stanley Cup that I'm not aware of? No. He was traded from Boston. Then they won the Stanley Cup. Mark Scheifele, same question. Pierre-Luc Dubois, same question. I mean, the irony that these guys have any sort of expectation, entitlement, whatever you want to call it, when they've done nothing at the NHL level to get them the respect that they expect, I think, is humorous, to say the least. And I think it's definitely going to be something that is required. And look, I don't know. I mean, it's weird. You know, I was talking to some of the other media guys, and it's true. Like, the reality is, like, you're not in the room the way you used to be. You don't have that interaction the way you used to be. You don't see the dynamics. You know, we're obviously let in the locker room generally when they're out. Practice is different, though. Practice, you could be there. Guys would loiter a little bit. It wasn't the same vibe. And you'd get a sense a little bit more of what was going on with the team than you do now, being removed from the locker room and not having sort of that element of insight, I don't think, that you would have, you know, in the last, you know, prior to the last 2 years. So, I mean, it's an interesting situation for this Jets club. But ultimately, like I said, I think the person who's going to come in there and set the tone, and that's why I think Barry Trotz has become the guy that everybody has the blinders on and has to be the guy. Because, you know, what has he done to every group he's been a part of? I mean, obviously Nashville was an expansion team when he took that head coaching role. But look what he did in Portland, right? He won head coach of the year, won the AHL championship, right? He won the Calder Cup. Then he goes to the NHL, and he's a very good coach and turns Nashville into a contender. They never obviously won the Stanley Cup, but they were a very good team. And then goes to Washington and does a lot with them and changes a team that was a perennial contender but couldn't get over that status into a Stanley Cup champion. Goes to the Islanders. I just think, like, that's why this group needs someone, ironically, because like I said, like I pointed out, they haven't done anything themselves to merit the requirement as the head coach having experience and being this well-respected guy. But I think in order to bring these personalities, like, rein them in, you know, you don't have, you just need that. And I think, you know, it becomes part of that element that is going to be necessary for whomever the head coach is. I mean, look, Kirk Muller is a guy who's had success as an NHL player. You know, you can say, oh, well, you know, his first go around didn't go very well, yeah, you know, and as a head coach. Okay, well, you know, then you assume that maybe he's learned going back and being an assistant coach, and now he knows. I mean, nobody is necessarily, like, the idea that you can fail and not come back from that failure, to me, makes no sense. I mean, the whole point is we're all about redemption stories. We're all about guys learning from their failures and then getting better as a result and seeing what you can do. I made a mistake. Okay, well, are you going to be pigeonholed and say that mistake is what's going to label me for the rest of my life? Or do you say, you know what, I can learn from that mistake, take elements now from, you know, being with other successful head coaches and do my job. So I think it's going to require a veteran coach. Ultimately, I don't think you're going to get a guy who's a quote rookie or light on wins or experience to coach this group. And I think the truth is, ultimately, if you get someone like Barry Trotz, you know, like I said, who's that prize apple, the guy everybody has their eye on, you know, maybe that does change a lot of what we're hearing. And again, and the comments have been in the chat, and it's not incorrect. A lot of stuff goes away when you're winning, and when you're losing and it's not fun. Like I said, guys, I watched this Moose team, right? And they were having fun. Every guy, every single guy, these guys were distraught. They weren't able to push it because they felt so much belief in each other, but they were distraught. Like, we were talking to them 2 days later, and David Gustafson was like beyond himself, like just still bitter. All these guys, they were, but the reality was every single guy I spoke to in that end of day media availability spoke to the idea of how much fun it was coming to the rink, how much they enjoyed their time there, and how much they loved playing with this group. That's what this team needs. Again, I mean, it's going to require some reflection from, as you said, Drew, the leadership group to say, what can we do better? The number one word that I heard at the, like, day one of Moose training camp was inclusivity. We have to be inclusive. Doesn't matter if you've been here for 4 years, like, or three, I guess 3 years, like Jimmy Olney, or if you've been here for, you know, like a minute, like Wyatt Bongiovanni or Daniel Torgerson, or, you know, Henry Nickinen, the guys who the Jets brought in, the Jets, you know, either the college kid or the two Jets draft picks who were signed late. They were all made to feel like they were part of this group. You don't get that sense with Winnipeg. I don't know, but I just don't have that same feeling that they are that same tight-knit group that this Moose Club is. And so that's what I think is an element that they're going to have to learn. They're going to have to bring everyone in. You can't just do it yourself. You can't be a divided room. We've seen that. Look at Minnesota, guys. Look at Minnesota. Minnesota for years was rumored to be this cliquey, divided room, you know, led by Parise and Suter, right? And what ends up happening? They get bought out, and Minnesota's turned it around. So, I mean, you have to. They did, but I mean, like, they've got an up and coming young team, right? As so, I just think like
I'm just being an ass.
No, I understand. Yeah, I mean, I just think
it's well taken, though, Ezzy, that you know as great they had a tremendously successful regular season. Right. But I mean, well, that series against St. Louis, everyone sort of thought from the get go that it was
could have gone either way. St. Louis is a good team. I'm obviously joking, Dave, but yeah, you make a lot of good points. I mean, I think you know what resonates with me the most is how much winning changes everything. Right, like we all remember. You know, that four-game road trip, which basically was the final nail in the coffin, right? We're talking about those losses to, you know, Tampa Bay, Florida, Carolina, the Rangers. I mean, the four wins at the end of the season at home were nice, but that road trip, guys, like we all felt it doing the post-game shows and, you know, watching, you know, some of these players, you know, on the Zoom interviews afterwards, like these guys, it was the end of a really difficult season. Like whether you want to talk about, what happened with Palmer
winning. How do they get back to winning? Is it as simple as hiring the right head coach, whomever that might be?
No, it's not as simple as that. And that's another thing, you know, Marat talked about in his mailbag, and he's talked about before. Like, Barry Trotz doesn't guarantee you a Stanley Cup. I mean, if there's one coach that guarantees you, you know, a long playoff run or if he comes close to a guarantee, it would be Barry Trotz, because look what he did not only with the Capitals but with the Islanders most recently. But it's not a guarantee, guys. Only one team wins the Stanley Cup, and lately it's been the same team, right? So, like, I mean, I think, Drew, it's a combination of things. I mean, I think probably what's the most important is that this Jets team becomes better defensively on a game-in, game-out basis, because it's just been too many years, guys. Like, it goes back to that 2018-19 season, the year they got knocked out in the first round by the Blues. Like, this team just hasn't been good enough defensively. Obviously, the coach – you know, has a lot to do with instilling that defensive structure, but a lot of it, you know, falls on the players and executing, and everyone realizing. Like, and that's the other thing too, like that there is only a couple more years left with this core group. Like, we don't know if, you know, we don't know if Connor Hellebuyck will be here 2 years from now. We don't know if Mark Scheifele will be here 2 months from now, right? So, I mean, there could be a lot of change, not only, you know, in the next couple of years, but, you know, in the next few months. So, I think that's why there's going to be even more pressure on the Jets at the beginning of the season, because we know they didn't have, you know, the best start in the first three or four games. They turned it around after that, but, you know, with that 9-3-3 record. But yeah, I think, you know, you can't just, you know, wave a magic wand and turn this Jets team into, you know, a Stanley Cup contender. There's a lot of things. There's going to have to be some personnel moves in the offseason, but there's also going to have to be a better team buy-in on the defensive side of the game for me.
I think there has to be attitude adjustments, and I'm not talking about the wrestling move. You know, John Cena's not coming in and slamming anyone through a table. There needs to be attitude adjustments, and people need to reevaluate how they go about their business, because the way that they've gone about it, both on the ice and certainly off the ice, clearly has not been good enough for the last 2+ years. I mean, you talk about the year where they lost to St. Louis. You remember that for a large part of that year, they were one of the best teams in the NHL. They were one of the top teams, you know, and then something flipped. And it's been nothing. It's been a gradual downhill, incline since then. So clearly, whatever approach you've been taking hasn't been good enough. Now, it's not easy to ask professional athletes or anybody in general to sort of change how they approach anything in their lives. If they've been doing it one way for 30 years, asking them to flip a switch is not easy. So that's why in Minnesota, it was clear to going back to that example that, you know, Ryan Suter and Zach Parise weren't going to change. Management made the hard decision, and it certainly couldn't have been an easy decision. They made the hard decision that something needed to change. The players refused to change. We have to change the players. I don't know. It seems like the Jets need to be doing something similar to that effect. I don't know if the organization is self-aware enough to try and make that assessment. And expecting a head coach to come in and be able to immediately flip that, even a head coach with the gravitas of Barry Trotz, might be a lot to ask. It might be too much to ask. That is a real question to this offseason, is how do the players, you know, they said all the right things. Most of them said a lot of the right things before the season ended. How do they take what they said and action it?
Well, yeah, and you're right. And there has to be, I mean, there's no real option. If you don't change, you're not going to turn into the Stanley Cup contender. That, look at all the players, like the core group of players on the Jets want to win. I mean, I think hockey players in general and athletes in general want to win. But I think these guys, it's not like, I don't think, you know, that's the question. It's that the way they've gone about, you know, their last few seasons, going back to even three seasons, going back to 2019. I mean, their style of play has not been conducive. Like when you look at the, whether it's the Lightning or the Avalanche or the, you know, the teams that have had success, obviously the Avalanche just got over the hump, but you guys know what I mean? The teams, yeah, the real top teams, the real top three or four teams in the NHL, they go about their business and they play a certain style and they conduct themselves in a certain way. So the Jets are going to have to change. And it's not to say that, you know, these guys are going to have to do a complete, you know, 360, but it's, they have to evaluate, you know, their role on this team and, you know, what they have to do, you know, so whether that means, you know, a guy like Blake Wheeler takes on a lesser role on the third line, or, you know, whether that means that a player like, you know, Mark Scheifele has to have a, more of a commitment to playing on the defensive side of the game. You know, these guys are going to have to change their style and change their attitude, regardless if it's Barry Trotz or if it's Kirk Muller or Todd Woodcroft, whoever, guys. I mean, you look at the teams that have had success lately, you know, not just Tampa Bay, but, you know, the teams that, you know, are proven winners and are in the playoffs year after year. Look at a team like the St. Louis Blues, right? Like, to me, you know, even though the Blues are out, I mean, they were not an easy out for the Avalanche. They could easily be going to the Western Conference Final against Edmonton.
They're a professional hockey team. Then you can see that the veteran leadership and they're, you know, you heard Ryan O'Reilly say, you know, yesterday after they lost, you know, the disappointment and that they thought that they underachieved and, you know, they were playing against the juggernaut Avalanche team. Whatever you want to say about the St. Louis Blues, you can see the professionalism that runs, that courses through that entire organization. The Jets need to find that professionalism again. They need to find that level where underachieving isn't an option no matter what.
Absolutely. They, at the very least, they have to be a playoff team next year. At the very least. I mean, you obviously want to go on a long playoff run, but there's too much talent on this team to be, you know, out of the top 16.
We take our final break. Erik Comrie, Winnipeg Jets goaltender, scheduled to join us at the bottom of the hour. Stay with us. Don't go anywhere. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live. 1:30 in the morning, Saturday morning. Hope everyone's having a great start to their weekend. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Collectively, we are the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hoping to have Erik Comrie join us momentarily. As soon as we do, we'll bring him in to this fine studio. Dave, what were you doing with your finger there? Well, we got a second. I should remind people that coming up on Monday, a special Manitoba Moose end of season broadcast. Dave M going to be leading the charge, I believe.
Tuesday.
3 o'clock Tuesday afternoon. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. And who's joining you to talk about the Moose as they wrap up their 2021-2022 season?
Moose GM Craig Heisinger will be on, as well as Moose head coach Mark Morrison. We're going to have a few players joining us as well. So far, assistant captain or alternate captain, Cole Meyer will be joining us as well. And most likely one or two Jets prospects. I won't name names, but one's a left side guy and one's a guy who was probably recently traded to the Winnipeg Jets.
I wonder if you can maybe piece that together. The detectives can figure that out. So be sure to join us back here on our YouTube channel Tuesday for that special end of season Moose show. And I'm sure Dave M will have all the content as well on our website. What's that website, Dave M?
A little site called illegalcurve.com.
There you go. Good stuff. So you can look forward to that coming up next week. And of course, if there's any breaking news with regard to the Winnipeg Jets all throughout the week, as well as the daily Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose morning papers, it'll all be on the website, illegalcurve.com.
I went to school with a Jay Miller. I don't know if it's that same Jay Miller. Jay, if you went to Kelvin High School in the late 90s, that would be you. I don't think it's him, but just wanted to get that in there. Jay Miller, great name.
Okay.
I was just going to say quickly, thank you. Just to show you our audience pays attention, Further to the northwestern Ontario, I got an email from one of our listeners, watchers, and who gave me some of the backstory on Rat Portage, as I called it, which obviously became Kenora, and whether they were originally part of Manitoba and ultimately decided in 1889, I believe, to become part of Ontario.
Oh, there you go. It is a complete and total, it's a full service offering that our audience tends to bring to the program here. So they always appreciate the interaction. We always appreciate you good folks smashing the like button. If you don't mind doing that, be sure to do that. Smash the like button. Leave us some comments. Subscribe to the program. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Tell your friends, tell your family. The best place to be, of course, is the Illegal Curve hockey show on Saturday mornings and the Illegal Curve post-game show, which, of course, is a few months away from returning. Like I said, hoping Eric Comrie is going to join us. He's scheduled to, but it is the Saturday of a long weekend, and it is also 8:30 in the morning in California where Mr. Comrie is. So it's, fingers crossed he's able to get on with us. If not, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I wanted to ask you guys about the Pierre-Luc Dubois question, because we talked about that with Murat earlier, about the possibility of an offer sheet. He addressed that in his mailbag. I suppose it's possible. I don't just see it being a big problem for the Winnipeg Jets. I think it actually solves a lot of problems, as I alluded to when I asked Murat about that. I wanted your guys' opinion on that sort of thing.
Are you talking about solving the problem just that there's an offer sheet?
I'm just saying that it solves – if there's a contentious negotiation, or if there's a negotiation, you know, where the Jets and Dubois are unable or are having trouble coming to an agreement, an offer sheet that Dubois was to sign, if he was to sign one with another team, probably solves a problem for the Jets if there is a problem.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to clarify, because we know there's going to be some negotiations, especially, you know, if it ultimately turns out to be a long-term contract. We know that that's what it's going to be, right, guys? Like, Pierre-Luc Dubois is not going to be signed to a 3 or 4 year deal. It's going to be a 1 year deal or a 7 or 8 year deal, right? I just think you always have to remind yourself, boys, offer sheets are very rare. Like, it goes back to, like, we used to talk about this on the TSN 1290 days, right? Like the Sebastian Aho offer sheet, you know, the Jesperi Kotkaniemi offer sheet. Remember back in the day, boys, Ryan O'Reilly was signed to that offer sheet, right? Like, this just doesn't happen very often, right? Like, I realize there's the potential for that. I also don't know if Montreal Canadiens are in a position right now. They're not exactly in the best salary cap position ever, right? Like, you hear about like a guy like Jeff Petrie, they tried to move him. He might be still a guy that, you know, he makes a, you know, quite a bit of money on the back end, right? So I just don't know, first off, if Montreal would be the team, and I don't know if any other team really wants to offer sheet, because as Murat, you know, touched on, the Jets are going to match anything under 10.5. And I don't know how many teams are going to offer him that much money. He's a great center, but you just don't see it very often. So I would, you know, caution that. But yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit tricky because of the whole Mark Scheifele situation and how that's going to impact, you know, the next Pierre-Luc Dubois contract. But I think that there's no doubt. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. I don't think any of us expect Dubois to sign within the next week or two. It's probably going to be something that happens in like August or September. But I think there's no doubt that the Jets want to lock him up long term. We just don't know if that's going to happen here, because there always is the chance that, you know, he's qualified, files for arbitration, and, you know, we have a 1 year contract situation here. So yeah, it's definitely going to be something to monitor, but I don't think you should get too worried about it at this point, because all indications point to, you know, this is going to be a contract that's signed later in the summer.
You know, if I had to sort of do a domino effect of how I think the offseason is going to play out, Dave, I would say the head coach is the first domino. I think that's fairly evident. Then I think the decision on Mark Scheifele is probably the second domino. And then, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois is probably the third domino. If I'm, you know, for looking into my crystal ball of how things, in my opinion, are likely to progress.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it, because I think everything, as you just pointed out, is contingent on that transpiring. I mean, if I'm any of these players' camps, I want to know what kind of coach is going to be coming in here, and what is the expectation. You know, is this a coach who's going to want to oversee a rebuild and be amenable to that? Well, I mean, again, we've talked about it, right? Guys like Mark Scheifele doesn't want to be part of a rebuild. You know, Blake Wheeler probably doesn't want to be part of a rebuild, even if it's one, a New York Rangers style one, where it's a year or two and of pain before you get back to the game. Connor Hellebuyck doesn't want to be part of a rebuild. So I think, I think there's no question, Drew, that the first thing you have to do is figure out what it's going to look like. I don't know that the Pierre-Luc Dubois situation gets resolved quickly. I don't think any of those things ever happen fast. I think that's something that we're always approaching training camp, and it's like, what's going to happen with these RFAs? Will these RFAs sign? So that to me is always the we've seen it with Kyle Connor. We've seen it with Patrick Laine. We've seen it with Josh Morrissey. Like it, we've seen it a million times before where these guys wait, you know, until training camp essentially, or during training camp to ultimately sign their long-term deals. So, I mean, the Pierre-Luc Dubois, unless like Murat said, oh, we've lost Drew. Awesome. So unless we have a situation, Ezzy, this is the dream of Dave and Ezzy experience.
Like
so,
2 weeks ago when we lost Mindell.
Yes, exactly. So I think ultimately that's what's going to happen. You're going to have a situation where you see what the coach looks like. And again, if it's Barry Trotz, then Barry Trotz is going to pick up the first thing he's going to do. He's going to pick up the phone and he's going to call Mark Scheifele, and he's going to call Blake Wheeler, and he's going to call each one of these guys in a leadership role, and he's going to assess this team. And I suspect based on those conversations, that will determine the way this organization goes. That will determine the way that, you know, he decides, hey, you know, this is, you know, and again, the consultation will be with him and Kevin Cheveldayoff and the rest of, you know, Mark Chipman, whomever. And the reality is then they have the conversation saying, you know, what's going to happen? This guy is going to want to work with me. He'll stick around. This guy, I don't think so. And then they'll have to plan accordingly. So that would be my sense on it. I tend to agree with Drew. I think you have to figure out, you know, it's kind of like the old Simpsons quote. First you get the honey, then you get first you get the sugar. Then you get the money, then you get the women. So, well, he's got to get the sugar first. Then he can start worrying about the next step in the process, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Sorry, boys, I had to duck out there for a second, just trying to work on some things to get Eric Comrie to be able to join us. We're having some technical issues, as you know, the internet is great for things, but except when it doesn't work, and that's what we're experiencing right now, unfortunately. So, fingers crossed, they've been able to solve that problem, and we'll have Eric join us momentarily. Appreciate everyone's patience on that front. I was able to hear what you guys were saying about
We were actually hoping that Eric would come on, Drew, and that you wouldn't come back. But unfortunately, the opposite happened.
Yes, that's a totally fair and legitimate comment on your part there, Mr. Ginsburg. I'm not sure what was going on, but you know, these things are great, except for when they don't work, as I alluded to a moment ago.
Well, we haven't had many problems with that, so that's been one of the positives. I mean, if you remember, we did go offline a couple times on the radio station where we were just talking and it wasn't actually being broadcast. So this sorts of thing can happen anywhere. And ultimately, the three of us are still here. We're still
there. Was one time, you know, for those, you know, just were, you know, taking a trip down memory lane. There was one time we were in the TSN 1290 studio. That was about 4 or 5 years ago, where literally there was like a complete shutdown. Like we went completely black, like everything. Yeah. Like I think the water turned off as well. And we were kind of looked at each other sitting there in the dark. And we were like, okay, what do we do now? And then like 10 seconds later, everything just turned on again. So luckily we were able to finish that show.
There was the time that the system completely froze where we actually weren't able to ever go to commercial break. That was an interesting show where
we had like a 45 minute segment or something like that.
Whereas just, I think, you know, things, chaotic things, tended to happen at that fine place.
We're no strangers to chaos, right, boys?
We embrace the chaos. Exactly right. That's a little bit of our supplemental motto here on the program. So hopefully the link that I sent to the Jets PR, and then hopefully that'll get to Eric and he'll be able to join us momentarily here on the program. A lot of questions for this Winnipeg Jets offseason, as we've discussed throughout the course of the last number of weeks. And I expect those answers will begin to sort of solve themselves over the next few weeks. It'll be fascinating to see how everything plays out. You know, I think there is, you know, you asked it, I think, to Murat earlier, Ezzy, where, you know, what's more important, or if the Jets do trade Scheifele, do they need to get a center back in return for him? And I totally understand that perspective, because what's happening to your offense at that point in time, how are you going with your team at that point in time? But there's also the thought process that if you can get a clear-cut number one defenseman, boy, wouldn't that make a big difference on this team? Because you look at all the Stanley Cup contenders as of late, and sort of the one thing that they all have in common is that top flight number one, no doubt, defenseman. And that the Jets have some nice pieces on their back end. Obviously, the team needs to play better team defense. They have some nice pieces, but they don't have that no doubt number one defenseman. If you could get that, boy, that doesn't that sort of change the perspective of things for this Winnipeg Jets offseason.
Right, and there's always, we can't forget, boys, there's always the chance, you know, Mark Scheifele is a member of this Jets organization for the next at least 2 years, right? But I think that it's definitely not as easy as you would think just to find another top six center to do a one-for-one trade, right? So I just think it's something to consider that, you know, there is the possibility that, you know, if there is a trade, that it's going to be for a top pairing, you know, quote-unquote top two defenseman, right? So, yeah, I mean, look, you have Cole Perfetti and Chaz Lucius, both natural centers. I mean, they might play, you know, on the wing for the majority of their NHL careers, but I think it's just something to consider that you do always have those two young players, you know, in the it waiting to eventually kind of seize a top six center role.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's so many unanswered questions about this Jets team that need to be resolved, Dave, that mm-hmm. really are going to make it a mass, you know, obviously we know it's a massive offseason, but it's going to add so much drama and so much intrigue to this offseason. In addition, you look at the forward group. I mean, cap friendly has flipped over from mm-hmm. sort of their 2021 to their 2022 listing of roster players. The Jets, in terms of guys who are under contract, they have six forwards who are under contract at this moment, not including, you know, some of the guys who are down with at the Manitoba Moose level. It's Wheeler, Connor, Scheifele, Ehlers, Lowry, and Tony Nato. Everybody else is either a UFA or an RFA. So you can see the level of work that is in store for the Winnipeg Jets, for Kevin Cheveldayoff, and for the brain trust of the organization as things get underway over the course of this offseason. Looks like the technical issues have been resolved. We're pleased to welcome back to the program a good friend of ours, Winnipeg Jets goaltender Eric Comrie. Eric, first and foremost, not very many guests, athletes, journalists would wait through those technical difficulties we were having. We appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
No worries at all. I think I got the wrong link. I think someone sent me the link for last week's show.
That somebody was probably me in that case, and I will owe you an apology. No. I owe Scott Brown an apology.
No. You got that's Brownie's fault.
You can say that. I'm not going to say that. We'll
I'm
going to
say
that.
I'm
going to
blame Brownie for that one.
Eric, we're going to send Drew back to copy and paste school.
No. That's all Brownie. I think Brownie's at the wrong link.
Well, whatever it is, we appreciate you joining us, Eric, to talk about this past season, talk about the off season. I want to run something past you. You set career highs in NHL games played, NHL wins, goals against average, save percentage. And on top of that, and I'm sure I've missed some things, you had your first career NHL shutout. When I say all those things, what feeling does that do you get when you hear that?
I'd say a lot of pride. I'm just happy. I'm happy the year went so well. I was happy that all the hard work paid off this season. And it's almost a little bit like hard to speak because it's a dream come true to have that kind of season and be able to play and just play in the NHL as long as stay a whole year in the NHL. That was my goal, just stay the whole year. And for it to go as well as it did was just something I couldn't really expect it, but I put the work in. So I kind of knew there was a possibility for that, but it's hard to describe. It's hard when you say all that stuff, it's really hard to think about.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, you're being humble and, you know, but it was a tremendous year. You know, Drew mentioned the shutout that came against the Philadelphia Flyers. So yeah. So on behalf of all of us, congratulations on a great individual year for you. And, you know, we talked about it quite a bit earlier, you know, in the show, the disappointing season. And, you know, there's nobody better to ask than you because you are in, you know, that dressing room. But, you know, just how disappointing was the end of the season? Because even though I'm sure you love the personal accolades and how well you played individually, I don't think that there's anybody in that Jets dressing room that was happy with missing the playoffs.
No, well, first, thank you again for that, for the shout out. Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. But the big one was definitely the disappointment. It was tough. Like, it's hard to describe how upset we were just every single time we lost, every single game was like, oh man, no. And just, we felt the pressure at the end, which is kind of tough to deal with. Also just the pressure is like, okay, we got to win every single game here. We truly want to win every single game and make the playoffs. That's all we wanted to do, was make the playoffs every single day. And guys put in a lot of work in the offseason last year and a lot of work during the season to get better, because we truly believed that we had an unbelievable team and we were destined for great things. And it was truly upsetting and hard to describe, like, how much disappointment there was in that room. Like, it's hard to just tell you guys, like, how upset we were, how frustrated we were at times, and just little things like that just didn't go our way. And unfortunately, that's hockey. Like, hockey is a very random sport. Like, it's probably the most random sport there is. And just sometimes things don't work out the way you want it to. It's one goal game here, one goal game there, and all of a sudden it's like, well, you missed the playoffs by just a little bit, and it was nothing you could do about it. Just things happened along the way, and we had the talent, we had the skill, we had everything we needed. Just didn't work out, and the disappointment really was really high at the end of the year.
You know, Eric, when we had you on last summer, you were designated really as Connor Hellebuck's backup, and you didn't want to be satisfied. You didn't want to accept anything as yours. You wanted to work. You were going to put in all the work last summer that you knew you put in a lot of good work, and you knew you were capable of doing this. There was doubt. I would say on this show, we didn't have that same doubt. We had seen what you had been able to do with the Moose. But again, going back to the idea of validation, you know, you said your goal was to play a full season in the NHL. I mean, it's got to be so validating to know that you had that confidence in your own game and you knew that you'd put in the work, to have been able to come through it and see that you are more than capable of playing at the NHL level.
No, for sure. I mean, that was a lot of like, it gave me a lot of happiness just to know that, hey, the work I did paid off, and it lets me think, like, now I can, I mean, there's still every single day you got to work. It's funny to say, like, everyone says, oh yeah, you establish yourself as an NHL goalie. You never really establish yourselves with anything, because you're only good as your last practice. You're only as good as your last game. Like, for myself, I'm going to go out there and still work every single day to help keep myself in the league, because there's a lot of players, a lot of guys fighting to take your job every single day. And I think that you see that sometimes. You see guys, oh, I'm comfortable now. I can take a deep breath. I can relax. I've made my spot now. I don't think you can do that anymore. There's too much talent out there. There's too many people trying to take your job every single day. And I know I have to work every single day to maintain my stature of what I've built this year. And I think I've, if I continue doing what I do, I have a little bit of a base now, but I still have to work every single day to maintain the level that I had, and for people to trust that. Because if you go in there thinking, oh no, this is easy, I know what to do here, I know I've got this, I've established myself, things can get away from you really fast, and things can all of a sudden slide backwards. And it's next guy up mentality. There's always somebody looking to take your job, always someone out there, because there's a lot of talented people and a lot of really talented goalies out there looking to take that next step.
You know, Eric, you talk about what you need to do individually, goal being a goalie at the NHL level or at the AHL level, you talk about the tandem. I mean, you work obviously closely with Connor Hellebuck. You work closely with goaltender coach Wade Flaherty. What did Wade Flaherty and Connor Hellebuck do this season that helped you start to take that next step?
I mean, I can't thank Flats and Helly enough. I mean, especially Flats. I mean, we did so much work together. We would work a tremendous amount of time. We'd be on the ice half an hour early every single day, half an hour late. I was always pretty much the first one, always the last one off. And he was with me the whole time. He would never leave me. He would never be late to practice. It'd never just be me. It'd always be him and I working together. We work every single minute, and we just skating, so much skating stuff, puck handling stuff, skating, positioning. We did so much of it. I can't thank him enough for, like, he put in a lot of time, and not a lot of guys do that. There's a lot of goalie coaches who just say, no, take a rest here, take a rest there. He's like, no, we're going to work. And it was great for me. And that's what I wanted. And he knew that's what I wanted. He never had to push me to do that. And I never had to push him to come on the ice with me. And then the results just kept coming. Like, I got better and better and better. And he's like, just keep doing what you're doing in practice. And I think for myself, I get my confidence from what I do in practice. So me putting the extra work in, I knew, hey, if I put that extra work in the next game, I'm going to have a little bit, it's going to be a little bit easier because I put that work in. I put that work in again, it's going to be a little bit easier. So I think he saw that and knew that, hey, the more we work, the better he'll be in the games. And then Helly, it's more of like you learn from watching, like, the greats. You can always learn from watching the greats. And he's one of the greats in the league. And for myself, to be able to watch him every single day, this, the work he puts in, even in games, how he prepares and how he plays the game, how his positioning is and all that little stuff. it's the little work, even watching video, because we always watch a video together. So we talk about different scenarios. And I think that was a big help for me, because I'd be able to watch the video with him and he'd be like, the way he sees the game is very different than the way I see the game or the flat sees the game. So we'd have three people kind of going together and talking about, on this play, you wanted to project your hands here, but you didn't like how your hand didn't come with you in the backside. So it's that kind of technical talk. You're like, okay, now I see what you're saying. So you go to the next practice, say, you try it. You're like, okay, that really works. I'm going to make sure I put that in my game or try that little thing. It's just a little bits and pieces of the game, like even the post play, different post play techniques that we'd be talking about in video sessions that really, it's like goalie nerd out session kind of thing. And it was always a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And I wanted to just kind of move away a little bit from the Jets, but not move completely away, because this question obviously relates to some of your teammates, but I wanted to ask you about the World Hockey Championship, because obviously Canada, Czech Republic, it's underway. I'm not sure exactly how many minutes into the game it is, but Canada, Czech Republic / Czechia playing right now. Of course, your teammates in that game, friends, Adam Lowry and Pierre-Luc Dubois. And then you've got Nate Schmidt. Unfortunately, the U.S. lost to Finland earlier, but I'm not sure if you saw, they were down to four defensemen and Nate played, I think it was 27 minutes on the back end today. But just wanted to ask how much you've been watching, because of course you won the gold medal with Team Canada at the World Juniors back in 2015. How much of the World Hockey Championship have you been watching, and how nice has it been to see, you know, your teammates having that success?
No, for sure. I've been following along actually the whole tournament. I've been making sure that I've been keeping up with them. It's being in the States, it's really hard to watch the games live. I'm not going to lie, because they don't really broadcast them live here. And then I can't watch anything on TSN either, because it's blacked out. You're in the States, and you can't watch it. So I'm like, well, I can't watch it. So I've been watching the highlights. That game against their last game there, Sweden. Yes, that was unbelievable. They're down 3-0. Big comeback, all in the third period. Two goals in the last 2 minutes there or something like that. Crazy. And then that pass from Barzal was unbelievable to Batherson backdoor. Doobie had the second goal, I believe, right?
Yeah.
That was a fantastic game. Lowry, of course, he scored on breakaways every time he gets a breakaway shorthanded. Just the typical Lowry goal. So, I mean, they're just doing what they continue to do all season long. And I'm not going to lie, I haven't been following the U.S. as much, just because I'm Canadian, so I'm loyal to Canada. So I haven't been following Nate as much, so I haven't seen what they're doing. But I'm cheering for Canada. I really hope they do well. I'm really hoping for Doobie and Lowry, because I'm Canadian as well. So I want Canada to win a gold medal every single time. Selfishly, I always want Canada to win a gold medal because I'm Canadian. And but I've been following the scores as much as I can. Unfortunately, you just can't watch it here. It's just I don't know why you can't watch it. I don't know. I'm sure people would love to watch it here. They should think about broadcasting it more down here.
You know, Eric, we have to talk about your, like I said, going back to the idea of your first full season in the NHL. I mean, you've played in the NHL throughout the course of your since you turned pro, but this is your first kind of, like we talked about, your first full year. Was there a moment throughout the course of the year that, or a couple of moments that were just like, you know, a marvel? Like, again, like I said, you don't take things for granted, but something that stood out to you as like a cool moment in your, like I said, in a long pro career already.
Ooh, there was a lot of really cool moments. Just, I mean, one of the really cool moments was coming out of the opening night roster and just skating on the ice is like a, being called your name upon when the season starts, you know, and you skate across the ice, you go to the center ice and you wave. That was really cool to me. Just being to say, wow, I'm being announced in like a NHL roster. Like that was really special to me. Shout out against Philly was obviously really special. Beating LA in LA in front of because a lot of my family was in LA, was a lot of fun for me. Oh, I mean, there was a lot of really good moments. Just, I mean, even just, team dinners, like it's funny to say because there's a lot of games you play, but just being with the guys and having team dinners and really just having fun with them, and just you really enjoy that time together and you just build the relationships. There were so many, like it's special to think about going back the year, how many like surreal moments there were. But definitely LA, beating LA in LA, opening a roster and the shuttle, they're three big ones for me that I just will remember for the rest of my life. And another big one was beating St. Louis in St. Louis. That was special to me. Being New Jersey, I mean, kind of a former team of mine. It was really fun for myself as well. Just going in there and I don't know, kind of, everyone says you kind of like make them feel bad for dropping, but it's still the same thing. I don't really care. They're not going to feel bad for them, but it's still a lot of fun kind of just saying, oh yeah, I did that. I beat those guys. So.
Yeah. Another first for you, Eric. Eric Comrie, Winnipeg Jets goaltender, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Another first this offseason, unrestricted free agency. How is that playing out? What are your sort of, have you had any discussions, or your representation had any discussions with the Jets yet? You know, so how are you sort of approaching unrestricted free agency for the first time in your career?
It's funny, because if I would have waited one more day last year, I would have been an unrestricted free agent as well, because I was group six as well.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm kind of hoping I don't make it to unrestricted free agency again. I'd like to be back. I'd love to be back. I'd love to sign with the Jets. I mean, but we haven't been talking a whole lot because they got a lot of other stuff dealing with. They're trying to find a coach and all that stuff. So I understand 100%. They're very, very busy right now. And I think they're doing a great job of looking at a lot of different candidates for the coaching job. And whenever that time comes to talk to me, I'd be really happy to talk to them. I'd be really happy to listen. I'd love to be back. I mean, I have a lot of my best friends there. I mean, we have a great group of guys there. I love being there. That room is fantastic. And I would love to be back. I love the goalie coach. I love Helly, so we have a really good relationship there, and I'm sure when the time comes we can figure out something that's going to work for us, and it's going to be really easy to get done. I really hope to be back, but unless it depends on what they want to do as well. I haven't talked to them, so we'll see.
Let me ask you something, Eric. You say you've got a great group of guys and you have a great room, and then all this off season what those of us who are outside of the room, or those of us who aren't in the room, or you know, those of us are hearing, hearsay is the exact opposite to that. So as somebody in the room, what would you say to those who are saying differently?
Well, you hear the stories about like a few guys that were there that didn't fit in, but they were all two of the guys you heard about were trade deadline acquisitions. And I've kind of been one of those acquisitions, and it's hard to get kind of involved in the group midway through a season. It's hard to do that. Like, it's not easy. Like I've done that before, where I've been a midseason acquisition, and you never really feel a part of the group as an acquisition midseason, because that's the way it is. You haven't been there all year. You haven't been through the team bonding stuff. But for myself, being there all year, we have an unbelievable group of guys. Like, I loved every single minute there. And I think this year we did an amazing job of bringing guys in. Like, Barron came in. He was a fantastic guy. We got along with him great. Brooksy came in, and we were unbelievable how close we were with all the guys. I mean, everyone on the team this year was so tight. It's funny to say, but this was probably the tightest group of guys I've ever had this in my whole career. And we all got along really, really well. There was never a time where I was go to dinner and be like, oh man, I'm going for dinner with this guy. Everyone was like, oh yeah, come on in. This guy can come. This guy can come. This guy can come. And it was always just like a big group conversation. We got along really well. Practices were always a lot of fun. Every single day we went to the rink, we had a lot of fun. That's one of the main things you can look at as a group. And I mean, we had a great group. I hear these things, and a lot of people say, oh, this and this and this. But I've never felt that way. I never felt that way at all this season. This was by far the best group I've ever had in my whole time playing, which is really surprising to say, because it didn't work. It looked from the outside, it looks like there was something wrong, but there was nothing wrong with that room. That room was very, very good all year.
Well, let me just follow up with that one. And sorry, Ezzy, I know you want to get in there. When Paul Maurice left as the head coach, what impact did that have on the room from your perspective? I mean, it's sort of unusual for a coach to leave midseason. We've heard, some other of your teammates sort of address that in passing. From your perspective, what impact did that have?
That was definitely difficult. I mean, he's a very good coach. It was hard for him to see him step away. I mean, that's a tough question. It's a tricky question right there, because it was a tough thing to see, but also sometimes maybe a new voice is best. Sometimes a new voice is always going to help you push you along the way, because sometimes you get stale. Like anything, you don't have the same teacher every single year through all high school. You don't have the same teacher throughout every single year through elementary school. You have to learn new things from different people. Like it'd be dumb if you went to the same, if you started in first grade and your first grade teacher kept moving along with you every single year, it wouldn't be very smart. She'd be teaching you the same thing, single things every single day. Every single year you want someone, almost as a young kid, you have someone new teaching you. So you learn new things. So you grow and become smarter. Sometimes it's time for a new voice to step in and just say, hey, this is what we're going to do. You learn new things. You get a little bit more knowledge. You get your game becomes more well-rounded. And I think he knew that, hey, it was time for that new voice. He's been there for a long time. And he was a great coach, but I think he knew deep down, he's like, hey, it was time for a new coach. It was time for a new voice to just kind of lead these, this group of men to a different, platform, to a different place where they could, where he thought we could go. And Dave came in, and I think Dave did a really good job. But Dave was all, it's also tough when you have an assistant coach become a head coach. You never know how the dynamic's going to go, if you're going to keep seeing as an assistant coach, or he's going to transform into a different voice to see the head coach. And I think it took a long, it took us a while to see him as a head coach, which is our fault as players, not his fault as a coach, if you know what I mean. And I think that's, it became better as it went on, but I think it was too late. And unfortunately, that's what happened. So I think he did a great job. I think they brought in a really good guy, but it just took us a long time to see what we had, instead of us being like, oh no, he's an assistant coach. Instead of us believing in that he's a head coach, it took too long for that to happen. I think it did happen, but it took too long, if you know what I mean.
No, absolutely. And, you know, you use the coach teacher metaphor, Eric, and I wish I had my grade one teacher more, because by the time I got to grade four, I was in the hall every day. So I think that's, you know, for me, I think I would have benefited maybe from having the same teacher. But just wanted to ask you, I mean, when Drew said we were going to have you on, and I agree, thanks for joining us, because it's obviously, you know, a couple hours earlier there on the best coast, but you know, you live in California now, but of course you're from Edmonton. So we got to ask you about the Battle of Alberta, which obviously, you know, just ended. I mean, Connor McDavid, maybe the best hockey we've ever seen him play. But I wanted to ask you specifically about Mike Smith, because obviously as a goaltender, I'm sure, you know, you watch what he's doing maybe a little bit closer than some of the players. Just how would you kind of assess that series? Because I think you would agree, a lot of people, you know, were picking Calgary to win that series, but it ended up being the Oilers in five.
That was a crazy series. So it's funny, because we always do, like, my family, like my brothers and I, my brother and my dad, we chose what team we think would win each series. And I had Calgary winning, because I was like, there's just no way. I mean, I don't know. I'm a bit of an analytic nerd a little bit too, which is kind of weird to say. I'm a bit of, like, no hockey players are analytic nerds, but I'm a little bit of an analytic nerd. I said, there's just no way. Everything lines up. Everything says Calgary. Every single thing in the world says Calgary's going to win the series. So I'm like, well, they must win the series. But that, once again, it's hockey. Like, you think a Vezina finalist is going to beat the guy that Oilers fans want to run out of town half the time. So you're like, okay, well, this is going to be easy. The Vezina finalist is going to win easily, right? And once again, it's five games. And five games in hockey is just a random thing that can happen. And Markstrom didn't play his best hockey. And all of a sudden, Mike Smith just looked like he was the greatest goalie of all time half those games. He was playing unbelievable. And then still, I mean, they still want to run him out of town after he lets in the third goal of that one game, because it's like, oh no, he's the worst goalie ever. Then all of a sudden he wins overtime. He's the best goalie ever. It's funny how that works, you know. It's so funny. And then he played unbelievable. And then McDavid was just superhuman. And then, I mean, Draisaitl playing on a high ankle sprain. I mean, that's, I mean, I've seen guys with high ankle sprains. You're not supposed to be able to skate. He looks like he's fine out there. He looks 100% normal. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And then the Rangers series, like, this year of playoff hockey has been absolutely incredible. Like, I can't take my eyes off the TV. I've watched almost every single game of the whole playoffs this year, and it's been fantastic. I mean, Rangers series, Carolina has been fantastic. That Colorado series is really good all of a sudden. I mean, it's been fantastic hockey. Like, I mean, there's not been one series where, like, oh man, that's kind of boring. Even, I know the Florida Tampa series was a sweep, but it was good hockey the whole time. Mm-hmm. And Vasilevsky just stole the show, and it was, as a goalie, that was like, oh, that was the most impressive thing I've ever seen. I mean, Vasilevsky's doing, I mean, my brothers were saying to me, like, so my dad, we were having dinner with my brother and my dad last night. Actually, Mark Scheifele's in town right now, staying in my house too. He's here. So where it was myself, Mark, my dad, and Ty at dinner last night.
Does he want to come on the show also?
he's actually working out in the gym right now. I'm sure you guys could have a good conversation with him too.
I'm sure we could.
Yeah. So we're at dinner last night, and all of a sudden, my brother goes, like Vasilevsky, I think, cemented himself as maybe the best goalie of all time. I'm like, what? I don't know about this. You got Hasek, you got one. I'm thinking to myself, like, I don't know if I can argue against it anymore. Like, it's hard. It's a hard argument to make that he's not the best of all time anymore. Elimination games, the guy doesn't get scored on anymore. It's absolutely incredible. You know, like, Game 7 against Elise was just special too. I mean, it was incredible what he did.
And, you know, one of the biggest things I think probably playing into that is having the fans back. I mean, you can just feel the difference. And I know you would say that when you actually have fans in the building, it's such a different environment And, you know, the last couple of playoffs, obviously playing them in the summer, it's harder to draw that interest without fans, even a limited number of fans in Canada, at least. It just didn't have the same impact. No. And as soon as you see that the sea of, you know, the Calgary is full, Edmonton is full, the buildings are full, even when they're playing in the other cities, the outside, it just adds such a different element. And it makes it so much more exciting for those of us even watching on television, let alone you playing.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I'm a player, but right now I catch myself being a fan right now because it's so good. I'm just watching every single minute. I'm like, wow, this is the best hockey I've seen ever. And I think, I mean, you guys have the Sportsnet. We have TNT and ESPN. Mm-hmm. They're doing a fantastic job. Like, just how much they're growing the game. I know NBC had it before, but like it was sometimes hard to, like, it was, we said, we're talking about this last night, the ratings being way up in the States for hockey. I mean, it would be hard to watch on NBC because you're like, oh, what channel is it on? Is it on 220? Is it on way below? Now everyone goes to ESPN to watch sports and like, oh, hockey's on. I might as well put it on. Or TNT to watch basketball. Oh, hockey's on. I might as well put it on. I think it's been unbelievable for the game. Like, just getting back on ESPN and TNT has been, like, I think it's going to be a game changer for hockey. I think people are going to, it's really going to grow the game. I'm really excited to see where it's going to take it, because, and their crew they have on is, it's a great crew. I've been really enjoying it. It's been a lot of fun to watch the games and just listen to them, and just, you get to see the atmosphere, and it's been unbelievable. I can just really enjoy it so far.
Eric, we could talk to you for hours on end, but I'm sure you have things you want to do on your Saturday morning. We appreciate you waking up early with us.
We'll talk to Mark now, Eric.
No, we got to go golf today now.
I was going to say, I was going to hope you guys are going golfing at least.
Yeah, we golfed yesterday. It didn't go well for us. We got beat up yesterday.
You and Mark got
the big Friday game at the golf course, and oh man, it was a rude awakening for us. Let's put it that way.
Reminding you why you're a professional hockey players and not professional golfers. Was that one of those kind of days?
Yes. We're hoping that when the handicaps, let's put it this way. I started every summer I come back as a 5-7 index because my handicap really drops.
Yeah.
I'm up to like a 10-1 right now from a 5-7. So I've gone up five whole points. It's ugly right now. The game is not where I want it to be, but hopefully it will start coming around.
You'll be in mid-season form in no time. But the last question is always the hardest question. We heard some barking. We heard some squeaking. We got to see the dog.
You want to see the dog?
We got to see the dog.
Hey, Django, come here, buddy. Buddy. Oh, come here. Come here. Let's see him. Django, come here. He's worried about Oliver, the chase dog right now. Let's see if I can get my camera to see him. Django. Here you go, buddy.
There you go.
Oh, nice. Shepherd.
Hey!
Oh, German Shepherds.
We can see it. Yeah. Do they get along?
Yep. Really well. Chase dog Oliver is a little bit of a duck toll retriever, and Django's a big German Shepherd, and they get along really well, actually. So,
are the goats there too?
No, the goats are not here.
Mark doesn't bring the goats with him.
No, but the dogs are playing along really well. There's Oliver right there, and there's Django watching him. Oliver's been swimming in the hot tub a lot. And my dog is terrified of the water. She's like, what are you doing, man? You're gonna get yourself killed in there. He's like, scream out, get out of there, you're gonna get yourself killed.
Well, in that case, we'll let you get to the golf, we'll let you get to the dogs. You can say hi to Mark for us as well. Eric, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate your time. Hopefully we'll be able to do it again this off season before the season starts, and hopefully, like you said, you're a member of the Winnipeg Jets and we can keep the conversation going. All the best to
you. Awesome. Thank you guys so much. Awesome. You guys have a great day and enjoy Winnipeg. Hopefully back.
Thanks, Eric. Take care. All the best.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Bye-bye. There he goes. Eric Comrie joining us on the Illegal Curve hockey show. I mean,
I like that spontaneous, like, you know, pivoting there and showing us Django. That was awesome.
Well, you got to see the dog. I mean, you hear the dog in the background. You got to see the dog. That's one of the rules here on the program. You know,
I was worried that was you barking, Drew, to be honest with you.
I thought Drew was just biting a squeaky toy.
Yeah, no, that'll be after. I'll bite into something squeaky after. Look, Eric has got the reputation of being one of the best, one of the most gentlemanly players, one of the most gentlemanly interviews. Clearly, That only speaks to itself and speaks to how.
And a huge scoop. I don't even know if Elliot Friedman and Darren Dreger know that Mark Scheifele's staying with Eric Comrie. That's a huge scoop. I mean, we're going to get tens of thousands of hits on the website today, boys.
I'm sure we are going to get exactly that. Dave M will have that available for anybody who missed it very shortly. It'll be on the website, illegalcurve.com. It'll be on our YouTube channel, of course, as an immediate replay in case you missed it. And of course, it'll also be available on podcast. Just some great look. Eric Comrie is honest as the day is long, and that was just terrific. And we appreciate his time. We thank him. We thank, of course, the Jets PR for arranging that as well. We've gone way over time, gentlemen. We'll be back next Saturday morning with another edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A reminder, Tuesday, we'll have Dave M and his special Moose end of season broadcast. So I believe 3 o'clock Central Time is when that's getting underway. And of course, it'll be available in case you can't join us live at 3 o'clock. It'll be available after that. If there's any breaking news over the course of the week as it pertains to the Winnipeg Jets, that'll be available on illegalcurve.com. It'll also be available on, we might even come up and do a pop-up show if it is newsworthy enough. You never know where you're going to see us come up. So stay with us. Stay tuned to all of our social medias for all of that news.
Just a quick update too. Canada has tied it up. Dylan Cousins. We talked about the territories earlier. We got Cousins from the Yukon, Whitehorse. He's tied it up at one. David Krejci opened the scoring up for Czechia/Czech Republic, but it's tied up at one. So Canada looking still very good, possibility going to the gold medal game against Finland.
There you go. Exactly right. So you can stay tuned for that. And of course, a gold medal game or a bronze medal game will occur tomorrow. But we all hope, as Eric said, as well, as a loyal Canadian, he hopes that's a gold medal game tomorrow it'll be Finland, as Finland defeated the United States earlier. I guess before we wrap up, we've gone long at this point in time. Might as well go a couple minutes longer. You know, Eric said that, you know, what the noise from people who aren't in the room or the guys who are in the room only briefly is just that. He came from a different perspective altogether, saying that, you know, it's a tight-knit room. It's the opposite of what you're hearing. You know, just a different perspective from somebody who's actually in the room, that it's worth highlighting and mentioning that the truth, as usual, probably lies somewhere in between everything you're hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, right? You hear much more of the negativity when a team is losing and is outside of the playoff picture, right? Like, we didn't hear a lot about this, you know, when the Jets were making the playoffs every year. So even though there might be some unresolved issues within that dressing room, I think it's safe to say that it probably is overstated, you know, how many issues there are in that dressing room. Like, are we talking about one player, two players, three players? I think that's much more likely than, you know, half of the team or something like that. So yeah, it's an interesting perspective, and you might as well ask a player who's in that dressing room as opposed to us who just, you know, watch the games at the arena and watch the games on TV. So, I mean, yeah, it's kind of refreshing. Eric actually said it's the closest tight-knit group he's ever been a part of. And he's been on a lot of teams, both professional and junior, right? So, look, I do think that, you know, there are some, you know, personalities who clash in that room, but that doesn't mean that, you know, it's not a tight-knit group, right? And Eric said it himself, right? So you kind of have to maybe take a step back and maybe reevaluate how fractured that room is, if it is at all.
Yeah, fascinating. And it's, different folks, different perspectives, different, you know, it's amazing how two people can see the same picture, but see two actual different things in that picture, Dave M. And it was very interesting to hear it from Eric Comrie, who, of course, is in the room and dealing with it on a day-to-day basis.
I also think the most important factor is that, what did he say? He loves Winnipeg. He wants to sign here. I think that was a big nug, if you will. And the fact that he wants to come back and be a member of the Winnipeg Jets. And why wouldn't he? Right. I mean, he said it. These are some of his best friends. It's the organization that drafted him. He's grown up probably as a person and as a professional here in Winnipeg. And he knows the opportunity, knows what is in front of him. And so I just think, Well, Kenny's water bottle. We're happy to have Eric be the fourth member of IC. Although the truth is, at that point, we'll get rid of Drew and it'll just be the three of us. But the reality, or we'll kick Drew up to management, kind of like the Barry Trotz plan. We'll just get rid of Drew, but we'll just make him management. So, anyways, I think that to me was the biggest.
Jenga could probably host, to be honest with you.
That's true. Good old Shepherd. So I just think, like, I just think that it's one of those scenarios that that's what, you know, if you're a Jets fan, you were worried about the contract situation with Eric and the fact that he will be a UFA. Well, I'm not so sure he knows that he's going to be a UFA. I think he might think he's still group six, but the reality is, like I said, you know, that's what you want to hear. And look, guys can say a lot of things to, you know, fill space and, you know, tell people what they want to hear. That's not what Eric Comrie was doing. I think he was being genuine. That's what we've come to know of him from, you know, years of dealing with him from the Moose perspective. And now obviously his full year in the NHL with the Jets. So that to me was a good sign that, you know, he isn't looking for another opportunity. Look, I mean, ultimately he'll look across the board. He'll examine his options, but it really does sound like he's a player who wants to be back in Winnipeg. And I think that's great. I think for the stability from a goaltending perspective, I think that this organization, especially what they have in the pipeline, I don't think it's ready to take over. And I don't see anyone out there right now that you're saying, okay, this guy is going to be a better option than Eric Comrie. So I think that to me is the biggest takeaway from the interview.
Just a fascinating talk with Eric Comrie. Like we said, it's available immediately after we sign off. It'll be on our YouTube page. It'll be, of course, available for podcast as well. Want to say a big thank you to all of our sponsors here of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and, of course, the Illegal Curve post-game show when that airs. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Betway, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and our friends at Grid Park. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. Reminder, Tuesday, 3 p.m., Manitoba Moose season wrap-up show. Dave M. and a flotilla of excellent guests are going to join him.
Flotilla, good word.
Flotilla, thank you. Saturday morning, yep. Next Saturday morning, we'll be back with another edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, tell your friends, tell your family. The best place to be every Saturday morning and when there's post-game shows is, of course, the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, big thanks to Murat Atesh. Big thanks to Eric Comrie. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Have a great weekend, everybody. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.